desert in the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening or good morning, as the case may be, across all these many prolific time zones stretching from the exotic Hawaiian and Tahitian island chains out west all the way eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Good morning there in St. Thomas. South into South America, north all the way to the pole, and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Mark Bell. Hello there. A Friday night, Saturday morning, and a lot to do. The third set of photographs from Cydonia are in. And while I don't want to steal Richard Hoagland's thunder, I do have a couple of faxes here, emails rather, from two people who have seen them. Now, if you go and you look at the raw data, you're not going to see much. You're going to see a few interesting features along a ridgeline, and you're going to see some pretty good definition because it's a pretty damn good photograph. But they missed the Ford. They were supposed to get the Ford, and they missed that. What they did get, though, seems significant. I'll read you two quick emails. Art, I'm sure you've seen the third set of Mars photos by now. Well, the debate is finally over. Nobody can refute what's on those images. We are not alone. Confirmation date, 4/23/98, Barry in Arizona. Then there is this. My Art, I just looked at the third set of Cydonia photographs, and those are definitely pyramids. They're covered with sand from Martian dust storms. Who can deny it? Brian. So at 10:30, we will tap Richard Hoagland on the shoulder, and we'll find out what the story is. Now, he's trying to get hold of Keith Rowland, who is probably just about going to make it home any minute now, and we're going to try to get these enhanced images up there for you. Don't look at the ones that are up there now. Even though they're very good, the strip photographs are very good, it is the enhancements that you have got to see. Until you get to the enhancements, you have not seen the right thing. And we're going to get to Tim Cannon in a moment, who once a month does a bit of an update on the Art Bell Chat Club. That coming up. 800-562-6438. One more item. The Bajan wind-up lantern on sale tonight through Monday only. Actually, for a week. It'll be for 1 week if supplies hold. Now, normally, the Bajan lantern, made of yellow high-impact ABS plastic, built-in handle, weighs 4 pounds, comes with a spare bulb and a charger included. But basically, you can wind it for 30 seconds, and the light goes for 3 minutes. And you get a charger, so if you wanted, you know, you would normally keep it charged, and that would go 2 hours. But you could always, in an emergency, get light by cranking. It comes with a 5-year warranty. It's built like a tank. Call Bob Crane in the morning. He'll get one on the way to you at 1-800-522-8863. 1-800-522-8863, actually. On Saturday morning, you can call him at 9 o'clock. 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturday. And then, of course, Monday morning at 7:30. Big sale on the Bajan wind-up lantern. CNN did a big, I'm sure you saw it on CNN. They love the Bajan products, and so should you, because in any emergency, you're going to need light, information, emergency supplies, and this ought to be right in your emergency supplies. Call Bob Crane Saturday morning at 9 Pacific, 1-800-522-8863. Now, there are not Art Bell fan clubs. Art Bell doesn't want fan clubs. But we do seem to have a proliferating a group of Art Bell chat clubs. I understand there may be as many as 50 of them now scattered across the nation. And obviously we cannot report on all of their activities now. It would be too overwhelming. But here is the international coordinator of the chat clubs from, well, normally from Denver. But tonight he's coming to us for some reason from Red's Coffee House in San Diego, California. Here's Tim Cannon. Tim, hi. We're coming up on 50 clubs, something like that?
48, yeah.
48, that's coming
and
up on 50,
less
yeah.
Less than 18 months.
Boy, if this keeps up, we could actually have political power. I mean, we could make or break a president, Tim.
Well, we're expecting about 650 people tomorrow here in San Diego.
Oh,
that's how many seats we have.
Yeah, Richard's going to have all the new photographs. That ought to be really something.
We're looking forward to it, and David John Oates always does a great presentation.
Oh, yes, and I understand that he's going to have reversals on the last call that Kent made.
Yes, we had dinner with him earlier. He's been working on it feverishly.
Well, I haven't heard those myself. I'd like to hear those myself. All right. Tim, as always, wonderful. Thank you for the great job you're doing.
Well, thank you, sir.
And keep the cells growing.
Okay. You take care.
Tim Gannon. As you can readily hear, these are clubs, these are not fan clubs, which would be the last thing I would ever want. These, instead, are places where people can gather and listen, obviously, to the same kind of guests that we have here on the program. In fact, the very same. In fact, I'm amazed at the guests they're getting. A dozen states reportedly plan to block Microsoft from making its June shipment of Windows 98. Oh, no! The much-awaited update to the company's Windows 95 operating system. The states plan to act within 2 weeks to halt shipments until they can hold hearings on Microsoft's alleged anti-competitive practices. According to ZDNet, a high-tech online news service owned by Ziff Davis Publishing Company. Why don't they leave Bill Gates alone? My God, doesn't he already have enough trouble? Windows 98 crashed in its initial demonstration with Bill Gates right up there on stage. The poor guy. What is all this anyway? Why is a man not allowed to be as successful as he can be? I think it's a bunch of fertilizer myself. I think they'd leave Bill Gates alone. I've said this for some time. Even having said that, however, I certainly will not try out Windows 98 anyway right away. I have learned through a long string of hard-won wisdom that it is not necessarily a good thing to be the first one to try something. And that especially goes for new operating systems. First, you got to listen. You got to run a tape recorder and listen for the screams from hell of those who have first tried it. And if you don't hear the screams, or once you hear them beginning to fade, then and only then should a cautious computer user load any new operating system into their computer. And even then, they should do it at the beginning of a weekend when they have lots of time to find out why flame shot out of the top of their computer upon loading the first new operating system. It's usually my experience anyway. All right, it is coming up on the bottom of the hour. The new Mars Cydonia photographs are in. Whether or not we get them on the site in time is an open question. I'd be betting on yes, but we'll see. In a moment, we'll connect with Richard Hoagland and see what he has to say about the new enhanced images from Cydonia. I understand they're a real shocker. We'll be right back.
The Talk Station, AM 1500 KSTP.
Shoucheré, weekdays 2 to 5 on AM 1500 KSTP.
Listening to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nine.
You know I need your love. Good morning. It's great to be here, everybody. A Friday night going into Saturday morning. Always fun shows to do. At the top of the hour, it's remote viewer Ed Dames, affectionately called by his colleagues Dr. Doom, and for good reason. Though I'll tell you something, Regarding a number of, I hate to say predictions, because that is not what he makes, but things that he has said will occur, I have several that indeed have occurred, and I have evidence of them right here. When the IRS takes on a taxpayer, and in a moment, Richard Hoagland, and he's definitely wowed, like my faxers. When the IRS takes on a taxpayer, usually a middle-class guy or a small business fellow, the IRS wins 85% of the time. That means you have a 15% chance of winning if you get an audit notice. They win because, of course, along with everything else, they have endless resources supplied by who else? The taxpayer, so they keep coming at you until you do what they say. Unless, that is, you have a shield yourself. And there is one. It's called Tax Resources Incorporated. But you've got to sign up now. Not after you get an audit notice. That's like trying to go insure your house after it's burned down. You know, fire. Doesn't work. You've got to sign up now. Look, it's $295 a year. And they give you tax advice all year long. All year long. And then if you are audited, oh man, they take care of the phone calls, the letters, the correspondence, the in-person visits. That you know, you're out of it. So $295 a year for that. A lot of peace of mind for a little money. The number to call is 1-888-82-AUDIT. That's 1-888-82-AUDIT. A-U-D-I-T. Call them. You can even call them at this hour, right now. Now, if you are suffering the slings and arrows and definite pain of arthritis, well then, this is for you. Glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate, according now to just about everybody in medicine, it was in the New York Times, actually help your body regrow cartilage that stands between two bones that otherwise rub together, producing swelling and terrible pain. It works. I have enough testimonials to sink a ship. I don't really like reading them. I mean, I could start reading them to you. But I'm just telling you, they come in and I'm 90% of, maybe better than 90% of the people responding say it works. Thank God. You know, that kind of relief is serious. Call Great American Products. If it doesn't work for you, you get your money back. You buy a 90-day supply, begin taking it. After a bottle or two, you'll begin to really notice a relief in swelling and pain and so forth. If you don't, get your money back. The number is 1-800-232-5665. That's 1-800-232-5665. Wow, listen to this. Gold at wholesale prices. Have you been watching the price of gold lately? It was at about $400 less than a year ago. It bottomed near the 280 per ounce area, now hovers around 300. Many financial experts are saying there may never be a better time to buy gold than right now, and they say that gold could easily go back to over $400 per ounce. My friends at David Hall's North American Trading believe now is the time to begin to add some gold to your portfolios. Make it easy to get started. They're doing something really crazy. They're selling you gold bullion at their exact cost. In other words, they don't make a dime on the transaction whether you buy an ounce or 100 or more. Now, I don't know how long this offer is going to be honored. So if I were you, I'd call them at your earliest opportunity. That's 1-800-359-4255. David Hall's North American Trading. 1-800-359-4255. Tell them Art Bell said to call and ask about the sale on gold. Well, all right, now to Albuquerque, New Mexico, which is the home or near Albuquerque of Richard Hoagland, who now has an enhanced version of the third set of Cydonia photographs that arrived this morning, and he sounds a lot like the people that are faxing me. Richard, is it that convincing?
It is spectacular. It's really something. Tomorrow, as the whole country knows by now, is my birthday. This is one hell of a birthday present. That's all I can say.
Wow.
And I'm going to be celebrating it with almost 1,000 of our closest friends tomorrow night.
And you will have with you this latest enhanced photograph.
Right? I was supposed to be in San Diego tonight. There is a very dear friend of mine sitting in a hotel room all by her lonesome because I'm here. I've been working on these enhancements all day to get them ready for the web. I called down to engineering, and Scotty is not there.
Well, Scotty will be back. He's having a leisurely dinner, I think, and deserved well with
his
wife.
Yes, yes. Well, sometime tonight we'll get these up. These are truly astonishing. If you refer back to Monuments, Monuments of Mars, the book I wrote, oh, those many years ago, the model that I put forth in Monuments for the city complex at Cydonia was not an Egyptian model. In other words, we're not looking at pyramids with little limestone blocks built up in mile, you know, cubic volumes. We're looking at something, I said back then, that was something out of Paolo Soleri, who was a brilliant Italian architect that I met back during my days with Cronkite, when he came over, immigrated from Italy to MIT, and we had interesting lunches where he was discussing doming in New York City. That was back at the beginning of the environmental movement art, when we were all concerned about the environment of the Earth. And one of the things that Soleri had in mind was that if you put every major city in the world under a huge pyramid, you could basically have the Earth go back to its natural luster because you'd put all the factories, you recycle the waste and do all that kind of stuff. Well, obviously that would never make it here because people like green grass and trees and being outside. But on a planet like Mars, where the air cannot be breathed and where the environment is frigid and cold and inhospitable to anything but a sophisticated high-technology colony, arcologies, architectural ecologies, huge enclosed condominiums on the order of several cubic miles in volume and a mile or so on a side and maybe several thousand feet tall,
boy,
made perfect sense. So when I looked at these pictures 15 years ago, God, has it been that long? 15 years ago, I'm looking at this complex and I'm seeing indications, just hints, on the Viking data that what we're looking at are huge versions of Paolo Soleri's vision. It's taken us now 15 years for me to sit here tonight looking at this computer screen, looking at the absolute overwhelming confirmation of that model.
All right. The third set of photographs to be taken by the satellite were to be, everybody had hoped, of what's called the fort.
Yep.
They didn't quite get that, did they?
No, he missed again. Malin has missed now twice in his aiming for some reason, and what he got was a strip that runs northeast to southwest down across the main pyramid, which is the big guy which we all at one time wanted to see, and the city square, those four littler guys that are arranged in this very interesting 90-degree angle pattern, and then a couple of smaller pyramids. I mean, when we say smaller, these things are still like a mile on the side. But the main target, the main focus of interest, the thing that's looked so geometric for all these years, even on the 50-meter-per-pixel Viking images, the fort, the eastern side of the fort, that huge, deep, rectangular light well that goes down to darkness and blackness, he missed that. Now, the reason that's important is because that will be the kind of quintessence of a climax for this. If we had gotten that picture, we would have seen at morning sun, deep into that rectangular space, and our prediction is there will be levels and levels and levels of very complex geometry protected from the wind, protected from the sandstorms, protected from erosion, which unequivocally would nail it for anybody that this is an exquisite, one-time, magnificent artificial complex.
All right, now I want to warn people. I downloaded the 4 megabyte lower image, which is what Richard is now talking about. We've got that on the website now. But even with a pretty good viewer, I'm not able to see what Richard says he's seeing and what other faxers are telling me they have seen. So there are people out there with better imaging software than I have. And perhaps you could tell, Richard, people who have this strip, ones who are capable of the kind of enhancements you're doing, where to look.
Okay. when we get ours up on the web, what I've done is crafted a whole graphic which has the Viking image, 35A72, with Malin's footprint of where the camera took this picture, supered over it.
Right.
And then I've got an enlargement of the main pyramid, the back of the fort, the city square and all that next to it. And then I've got an enlargement of that, the apex of that, the very tippy top. And then I've got a super close-up enlargement of that, which with proper enhancement you can do. And what's stunning is this incredible series of rectilinear room-sized cells looking for all the world like you've blown the roof off an apartment complex.
And you're looking down.
And you're looking down through layer upon layer upon layer of rooms.
I'm dying to see that.
The critical thing, Art, is these are not, I repeat, they are not aligned with the scan lines of the picture.
Okay.
And Van Flandern and I have been discussing this all afternoon because this incredible rectilinear pattern, which is at an angle to the scan, is very important in decoding what's going on in this whole complex. This is looking like the high-tech megalopolis that we projected 15 years ago, the arcology concept. I mean, I'm just sitting here imagining what this thing must have been like to live in when it was new. But it's if not several hundred thousand years old, it could in fact be several million because it is incredibly eroded.
All right. What does Tom Van Flandern? First of all, has he seen this?
Yes.
He has. What does he say about it?
He's blown away. He says unequivocal. And what we're doing now is making inroads to briefing certain correspondents and certain scientists.
Good.
And showing them this data. And one of the key things we need to do is we need to reach John Holloman. Because Holloman posted on the web last week a very important communique from Dan Golden, the administrator of NASA.
Right.
Remember, NASA is only supposed to give us 3 shots at Cydonia, and that's it. Malin has said, 3's enough, you don't need any more. The spacecraft is going to be in this particular orbit for the next 5 months. From now through September, I think that's 5. All right, maybe I'm losing count. Anyway, from now through September, this spacecraft, every 9 days, will pass over Cydonia. So our request to John Holloman, get your faxes ready, is that he call Dan Golden and basically make him live up to his promise, which is that he would continue taking pictures of Cydonia until everyone was satisfied. May I see a show of hands as to who is not yet satisfied?
Well, especially with regard to the first picture and the missing on the third picture.
Well, there are things that we would like to have. For instance, we'd like to have the east side of the face or a view from the top down. If we had that companion view, even at this lighting, even at, 10 o'clock in the morning, it would allow Carlotto to do his very brilliant shape from shading 3D algorithm and create the most stunning three-dimensional model of the face that you can imagine.
Well, I really, really would like to have good... I mean, for example, the photograph that came in today is stunningly clear.
They're getting better.
Wonderful exposure. Everything that picture number one did not have...
And should have been.
This is. And so if we could just now go back and get a photograph of the face from up above, I would really be a happy camper.
Well, there's that. There's the cliff, which is remarkable. There's the tholus, which is a key part of the geometry. There's the rest of the city. There's the areas to the south of town. If you'll notice on the web, the strip that he got today, which actually he got yesterday and they downloaded today, is a bit to the north of the city because of the timing of the orbit. They did a kind of a predict, and they basically opened the shutter a little early and closed it early so that it just got to the south edge of town, and then the picture stops. So with this spacecraft in this orbit every 9 days crossing Cydonia, it really is not much of an impact on the overall mission because he's obviously going to be taking other targets of science opportunity.
Sure.
But every 9 days he'll pass over Cydonia, and the crime against humanity would be if he doesn't take another picture. And Golden said he would do this till everybody was satisfied. Well, when I last looked, I was part of everybody. And this is so tantalizing. The exposures are now good. We're getting good resolution. The extraordinarily interesting parts are just there, just out of frame is the proper part of the fort. So what we really need to do is to let Dan Golden and John Holloman, who talked to him, know that we would like a few more passes.
Right. I agree. I absolutely agree. John Holloman's fax number at CNN is...
Do you have it in front of you?
No.
You don't have it in front of you?
No. You were supposed to have it.
Oh, well, I don't have it exactly in front of me. I can have it. Hang on. It might be... Here we are. Sorry.
Okay.
I do have it. Yeah.
All right. John Holloman.
You should see this desk. Area code 404.
Right.
681.
Right.
3578. Area code 404-681-3578.
Excellent.
Dan Golden's fax number, area code 202-358-2810. Area code 202-358-2810. And just for good measure, give a copy to Ted Koppel, who is paying attention. He agreed today to a sit-down briefing next week with some associates of ours, so a little jog of his memory that this is important, this could be history, will not go unnoticed. Koppel's fax number, 202-222-7976 or 202-222-7680.
Okay. All right. And you're telling me that...
They're stunning. They're just absolutely mind-boggling.
All right. You continue trying to get them, if you would, to Keith Rowland. He'll be there shortly if he's not already.
Absolutely.
And the moment they show up on the web, I will alert everybody to go flying up there and take a look-see. Now, I want to warn people a little bit. What is stunning to you and people who are used to looking at enhancements of ancient things, everybody's got to be reminded. I mean, a lot of people expect to look down and see condominiums with doors and Christmas wreaths on the door and all that. And when they don't see that, they're very disappointed. They don't understand what old archaeology looks like. And so they tend to go, oh, what a bunch of baloney. I don't see anything. And so they need to sort of adjust their mind, understanding that they're looking at something that could be half a billion years old.
Well, no, half a million.
Well, even half a million.
But half a million years of sandstorms will tend to do in architecture.
Yeah.
Look, the key thing is you're going to see extraordinary regular geometry. And Carl Sagan said to us before he left us that intelligent life on Earth first manifests itself in the geometric regularity of its design. When you see this kind of repeating regular room-sized geometry with right angles, and there are some windows and doors visible if you look carefully, okay? On the top of this one pyramid, and all I've had time to do is the one little section on the top of the pyramid. There is a larger view of the whole complex, but the real close-up, which shows this amazing geometric regularity, is only one little portion of a vast field of exploration. I mean, this is like armchair archaeology, interplanetary armchair archaeology at its finest. This is really one heck of a birthday present.
Oh, well, I'm so happy for you. I want to warn people because a lot of times they look at what you have, same thing you've looked at, and they don't see what you or an archaeologist or an astronomer see clearly.
Well, if the folks who are faxing you and emailing you this afternoon are not using the programs that we have, and I presume they're not because these are, you know, pretty good programs, when they see what we've gotten out of these same pictures, their raves are going to turn into superlatives that are beyond description. Because it is neat. It is amazing. It's consistent. And we have only just begun. Now, before I leave you, just one more thing. Tomorrow night, for a select group of people, you're going to get a chance to see these pictures up close and personal for the first time. And I really think it's incredibly elegant that the timing worked out, Art, that the first group of people that are going to get to see this are your listeners in an Art Bell chat club?
You know what I would actually like to do? After you do the demonstration next week, I would like to talk to the people who have had the privilege of being in the room and having you show them exactly what you mean. And I want to talk to that group of people versus people who randomly view the photographs on the web. So I'll probably be doing that next week. Anyway, you're going to be there when and all the rest?
Tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at the Del Mar Hilton. And there are a few tickets left. I was told to tell people that up to noon tomorrow, that'll be the cutoff for getting tickets at this 800 number, which is 1-888-338 1-888-338-8581. That's 1-888-338-8581.
Okay.
And noon is the cutoff tomorrow for tickets through that number.
All right.
You can show up at the door. It's in, where is it? It's 15575 Jimmy Durante Boulevard in Del Mar.
In Del Mar.
Yeah, Del Mar, yeah. Which is by the ocean, I believe.
And the whole affair begins at?
At 6 o'clock.
6, huh?
And it's 19.5. But it's $25 at the door, so if you order through the 800 number, it's 19.5.
You mean...
of course.
$19 and...
And 50 cents. Now, David Oates will be with me. David has, of course, been working furiously on the rest of our mysterious friend Kent. And we have a couple of surprises. And Art, you know one of those cute little things that we discovered about Kent that we haven't told anybody on the air?
Yeah.
We will tell people at the Del Mar Hilton tomorrow night, up close and personal, a cute little wrinkle we discovered after the program about Kent. And then we have his reversals of his confession. And then, of course, we have Bill Clinton and Dan Golden... in Houston, the day the second set of images were downlinked from Surveyor, talking feverishly about a manned Mars mission. And it's my prognostication that we're not far away, given the incredible nature of this data, from an official announcement.
Well, okay, you know what? That's what I was going to ask you about. Richard, NASA has released all of these photographs. Without comment. Now,
when Tom Van Flandern called Carl Pilker the other day,
yes,
to try to take him some stuff,
yes,
Carl said, oh, no, he says, we're putting it out there without comment. You guys can do whatever you want with it. We're not saying anything. Which is incredibly bizarre and unscientific.
Are they going to say anything at any point?
Well, they have to. But I think what they're waiting for is for us guys outside to basically drag them kicking and screaming to look at this, because then they can claim, oh my gosh, look down there. We didn't know that was down there.
So, no question about it. We'll get it up on the website as soon as Keith Rowland makes his reappearance. That should be any time.
The one night he's out having dinner with his lady.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's all right. All good things in time, and a little more time must pass. So I'm going to let you go, and I know you're going to try to get a hold of Keith right away. I wish you a good trip to San Diego.
Thank you, sir.
Happy birthday.
I wish you could be with us.
Happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
Take care, my friend.
You too.
Richard Hoagland. And there is a report on the new images, folks, just received tonight. As soon as we get it on the web, I'll let you know. Ed Dames, Major Ed Dames, SciTex Ed Dames, next.
Son, we got to get the word out about...
Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now, here's Art.
Good morning. Coming up in a moment, remote viewer, SciTex Ed Dames. It's Friday night, Saturday morning. I'm Art Bell. It's great to be here. I think this is one program that, well, Ed had a nickname. They called him Dr. Doom. That was his colleagues that called him that. Tonight you'll find out why. He's a very, very interesting man. And he has recently sort of reinvented himself out in the Pacific Ocean, as he told us so long ago he would do, out in the Pacific area in an unnamed location. So if you want to know what remote viewing is all about and you want to know what's coming, you're going to want to stay tuned. If these sorts of things tend to scare you, then you should turn the dial to a punk rock station somewhere, whatever it is you listen to. 800. That's 1-800-627-8800. You want the ignition system Art Bell has on his Hot Rod Metro. It's like a heart transplant for your car. That's 1-800-627-8800. And
check out their webpage at www.jacobselectronics.com.
Well, all right, whether or not you believe it, it is true. Nightline devoted an entire 30-minute program. I'm thinking it was 2 or 3 years ago now. 2 years ago? Maybe less, I don't know. We'll ask Ed. They devoted an entire program to the military's secret 20-year, I repeat, 20-year involvement with something called remote viewing. And shortly after that, we began to connect with remote viewers. One of them is Major Ed Dames, who was involved in that program. He left the military and then began a company known as SciTech, which does commercial or private sector remote viewing. And I'm going to let you tell him, I'm going to let him tell you, that is, a little bit about what remote viewing is and is not, what he does, why he's moved, his background, that kind of stuff. I usually read something on Ed. This time I thought I'd let him tell you about himself. Major Dames, welcome to the program again.
Good evening, Art.
Great to have you back.
Well, thanks.
And you are now back in the continental U.S.
I am. I was away for in the Pacific for about 3 weeks, and actually working in support of part-time. Part of that time in support of Project Starman, which is a SciTech project. In fact, at one juncture, about a week and a half ago, I was reconnoitering a position in an island to emplace equipment to support Project Starman.
Right.
Which, as I've explained before, it deals with contact. And the side of a cliff that I was on gave way. And down I went. And in the middle of this rock slide, as I was grabbing rock, moving rock, sort of going with the flow, it looked like curtains for Dr. Doom because there was a very high precipice ahead. The only thing I could think of was that I was going to die without my Art Bell wristwatch on. That is actually what occurred to me as I just before I reached this precipice.
Oh, no.
I realized I never got my Art Bell wristwatch, and I was going to die without my boots on.
You lie. Ed, you lie. I'll see what I can do.
Okay.
You shouldn't mention those because there aren't any more of them now that you asked. And I'm going to get a million requests. So.
I'm going to have to get. Can I have yours? At any rate,
I'm sure I have one extra.
I'm back, and the majority of our company's time will be in support of that project in the Pacific, and we have one more doctrinal conservative project, conservative for us in the Pacific now, and it's an in-progress project to pinpoint the location of Amelia Earhart's Lockheed Electra 10E aircraft, the one that she disappeared in. So,
all right, look, we've got to back up. Okay. As usual, I know it's tough, but tell people a little bit about the military project, how SciTech came to be, and what remote viewing is, all 101 short version.
Okay. About 1982, there was a breakthrough discovery in a laboratory on the U.S. West Coast. That breakthrough discovery was a means by which anyone using innate faculties and the powers that we're born with could use certain rigorous protocols that became top secret to be able to discern how the unconscious mind accurately transmits information to conscious awareness. This act was called remote viewing, and a team of military individuals, now we were not psychics, we were officers right off the streets, a prototype team employed this breakthrough technique to discern how far we could push this technique to use to gather information against very intractable strategic intelligence targets. When we began to utilize this to investigate the tool, we found that our work, the results of our work, surpassed even the work of the best natural psychics who had ever lived.
Wow.
So that was indeed a breakthrough. Prior to that breakthrough, the military was using a team of psychics These were gifted individuals in an attempt to gain some additional information against very intractable intelligence problems. That was a hit and miss type of a project. It was to a certain degree workable, but nothing like what we have today in terms of technical remote viewing at SciTech.
Okay. All right.
I stepped down from a very celestial level of intelligence at the Office of Secretary of Defense, where I was a targeting officer. I chose what intelligence targets this nation would go up against, what kind of missiles foreign countries had.
Ed, did you actually make the choices yourself, or did that come from, I would think a lot of that would have come from on high.
No, I got to make the choices myself. There are a handful of intelligence officers in two of this country's services who are allowed to do that. Some of us have carte blanche in our choice of jobs. So we were water walkers, and I chose to step down and become the operations and training officer of this particular unit. This was one of the many sources of intelligence that I used to fulfill my missions and to orchestrate new intelligence collection missions. This was just one aspect of intelligence, but it was so interesting to me,
sure,
I wanted to spend all of my time in it. So I stepped down to do it.
Fascinating. And so your total involvement with the military project was how long?
It was about 5 years with the remote viewing unit, and in that 5 years, I developed the training protocols that were used up until the end of the unit's history, just prior to the project Stargate.
So you wrote the manual.
I did not write the manual. The manual was actually written by a colleague of mine.
Yeah, metaphorically, I mean. In other words, you developed the protocols, so...
I took the protocols down from a six-month training regime to about 3 weeks. In SciTech, we taught this as a professional program to scientists and engineers in a 10-day, very intensive project. But I cut all the fat off the training program, the training regime, and modified it and finessed it.
The military protocols that you came up with and that eventually were literally put into a manual, they are still the ones that you use virtually with very little modification, aren't they?
Oh, no, absolutely not. That was called coordinate remote viewing. The actual, the standard operating procedure that we had in our manual that we did indeed write at the unit was called coordinate remote viewing.
Okay.
That was 15 years ago. So what technical remote viewing is, what SciTech has developed, is far and above remote. It's about as different as a biplane from an F-15.
Mm.
Very, very, very much enhanced and improved techniques.
There are many other remote viewers who we will not name. I've interviewed many of them. And many of those remote viewers have themselves modified the protocols. Have they gone too far?
Some of them were really never expert in the first place. There were some of the original natural team members. One of Joe McMonagle, for instance,
yes,
was served this country very well. He was a natural psychic. He did not know how to train remote viewing, nor does he know how to utilize the techniques we do today. But he's a gifted natural psychic, and he was used in a number of intelligence operations. Former Captain Paul Smith was a very good remote viewer. Paul and I worked together many times, but Paul only knows the original protocols, so he's about 15 years behind the times in terms of technology. But nevertheless, he can still fly that biplane very well. The other remote viewers did not teach. They never taught. They were either remote viewers or they were facilitators.
All right. Remote viewing allows one to see an object or a geography or even people at any distance, literally. And remote viewing also allows one to virtually travel in time
up to in a certain up to a certain point in the future, at least, to sort of an event horizon.
And when I say travel in time, I don't want people to be in an error out there. Not physically travel in time, but travel in time and visualize things as you would visualize things in the present timeline. Is that correct?
Well, it's a way of a rigorous set of protocols that are learned. This is a learned, a taught technique. And as you well know, our company teaches us via tapes. We are able, as remote viewers, to discern a tremendous amount of information, data, about a target, a person, place, thing, or an event, anywhere in space-time.
Okay. Let me back up a little bit. The military had you doing work like looking for gas canisters and that sort of obvious military work, and that's what they would be interested in. During the course of that military operation, when did it occur to the team that they could look at more than present tense, more than the present time? When did that dawn on the team?
It happened by accident. I'll give you an example. When we search out a specific target, if we do not constrain the search to time, to the present, the future, or the past,
right,
then we don't know where we are in time. Think of searching a database, any database, the internet or library. If you're going after a book, let's say the history of Europe,
right,
you want to constrain the search to a specific era in time, a point in time, let's say the early 17th century. If we don't specify an error, and then that condition is not present on our search, the way that we do our search,
right,
this is in a very alert state. You're sitting up, you have a pen in your hand, there's plain white paper in front of you, and you go through all these protocols. We don't do that, and we don't know where we are in time. We could, following along with this example, we could be in Europe somewhere. But if we did not constrain the search to a particular era, let's say the past, we could just as easily slip into the future. And it was in this way that we discovered that we could move in time. For instance, we were tracking the Russian space program using remote viewing. And one day, I and Mel Riley, another one of the remote viewers, we were describing a Russian space launch, and we tracked this back to its base where the rocket took off, the cosmonauts came back to Earth, and we were interested in one of the cosmonauts who we suspected of being a KGB scientific intelligence technical officer. We were interested in this individual.
Right.
We locked on to the individual, and we followed him forward in time, point to point, describing each place that he went in time. When we tracked him, we noticed that he crossed the Brandenburg Gate in Berlin, and that there was no Berlin Wall.
Right.
We could not understand what was going on. We adhered very, very strictly to our rigorous protocols, and yet we could not pick up the idea of the Berlin Wall on this Brandenburg Gate. He just drove right through on his way to Germany. So we thought that something went wrong. But what went wrong was that we were looking at a space program, a Russian rocket launch that was in the future, and we could not conceive of a time where there was no Berlin Wall. This was long before the Cold War was over. And yet what we had done was slip in time because we had not constrained the search, that is, the idea of tracking the Russian space program in time. All we did was look at the Russian space program, and our unconscious minds just carried that forward through time.
Oh, that's remarkable.
And that's how we discovered that you have to be very, very careful. Actually, I discovered that one must be very careful and nail down the viewer's unconscious mind, which we're using as the tool, to temporally as well as spatially.
So, in a way, you've got the only known working time travel that we have right now.
The In terms of data collection only.
Yes, of
remember,
course.
Remember, it's a passive way. In terms of describing things about the past, present, or future, yes, we're the only game in town.
All right. There are many people who have sent me many faxes in anticipation of your visit tonight. And the first question, there are several that I want to ask. You made a prediction about a plant pathogen. A canister that had separated from Comet Hale-Bopp and that was supposed to, I believe, descend or enter the atmosphere over Africa. And people say, well, where is it? What's happened? What's the current story on it? What can you tell us?
So I will give you an update on that cylinder. The
All right.
cylinder is no longer detectable using remote viewing. In fact, there is no cylinder anymore. It did disseminate its contents. It wasn't contents. The particular pathogen was embedded in a material matrix in the cylinder.
Right.
The cylinder, in essence, evaporated in the skies over Africa, and the spores are over Africa right now as we speak. Now, I say spores because we have some more information on this. We've nailed down the nature of this plant pathogen, this alien pathogen, if you will. It is a fungus. It is a super blight. It appears to be broad spectrum, but we aren't sure. In other words, does this target herbaceous or woody plants or both? Does it hit grasses? Does it hit the root systems of plants? We're not sure, but we are sure that we're dealing with a fungus. And what is in the atmosphere over Africa as we speak are spores in this fungus. And what we're is presently high in the atmosphere. The trade winds are going to carry these spores west to Latin America and the Caribbean. And not phytopathologists, plant pathologists should be really will notice, I am sure, something happening in equatorial Africa, because what will happen very quickly will be the emergence of a super blight. Now, this is a very dangerous thing, because blights, genetically engineered or not, are very, very damaging very, very quickly.
Do you still feel that it has the potential to virtually, ultimately, kill all living green things, plants and trees and so forth, on Earth?
No, I don't think it's going to kill everything on Earth. We don't know what the target. We don't know what the if it's how broad spectrum this thing is, and so we're not sure if it's going to go after, say, nitrogen fixing plants or what. But we do know we're dealing with a fungus. We do know that it is a fungal blight. So now we can do one of two things.
All right. How soon will we see the effects?
Very quickly.
Very soon now.
Very soon. In Africa first, and then in the Caribbean and Latin America, because the trade winds will because it's so high in the atmosphere.
As you have always said, Ed, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. We will be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Broadcasting to 20 states and 5 Canadian provinces with 50,000 watts of Twin Cities Radio. You're listening to AM 1500 KSTP, St. Paul, Minneapolis.
Sleeping. This is Art Bell, live on AM 1500 KSTP.
Kingdom of Nye. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again is Art.
As usual, I want to serve up my warning. I sort of know when I should be doing that, and that is the content of what you're going to be hearing tonight is distressing for many. Small children probably ought not listen to it. Even young adults, and some adults, should not listen. we're certainly going to do that. My guest is Major Ed Dames. He is a remote viewer. His colleagues have dubbed him Dr. Doom. And that's for a good reason. So if you can handle it, keep listening. We've got a number of things to cover. The first, of course, is that plant pathogen. And the news is, it's already here. So we'll get back to Ed shortly. Speaking of love, one of my favorite subjects, Mother's Day is coming up May 10th, and you don't want your mom to be left out in the cold, do you? Of course you don't. So you're going to send her some flowers, aren't you? Sure you are. Then why not go for the best deal in America on flowers? It's a flower farm. It's in Southern California, and all they do is grow miniature carnations and sell them at a wholesale rate to you. Now, that means you get this your mother gets this overwhelmingly gigantic shipment in a large triangular box of miniature carnations of every color of the rainbow. I mean, it really is overwhelming. Delivered by FedEx just before Mother's Day, and that is if you remember to call. And so I am now reminding you, you should do it now while you're thinking about it. They're open right now. And you can have them, you can ensure delivery just before Mother's Day. As we get closer, it will get more expensive. The price right now is $52.95, and that includes that delivery. So come on now. While you're thinking about it, you are going to do something for Mom, so why not do it now? Then it'd be gone. You won't have to remember it. You know, you'll remember it otherwise the day before Mother's Day, or not at all, worse yet. So call now, 1-800-562-6438. That's 1-800-562-6438. Well, now I've seen it all. You all know I've been raving about the amazing Snappy video snapshot from Play Incorporated. And many of you are already using Snappy to get incredible pictures into your PC. Well, look, I've got some great news. The scientists at Play have invented a new version of Snappy. It's called 3.0 Deluxe. It's got some breakthrough new features as well as a graphics studio full of professional software programs for painting, retouching, adding amazing special effects to your video pictures. As a matter of fact, this new Snappy gives you the same stunning still pictures from any camcorder, VCR, or TV. Plus, now, the ability to capture moving video clips. It even lets you add audio greetings and narration to your video pictures. And now, you get all the software you need to make greeting cards, business presentations, calendars, school reports, even sending your pictures over the internet with a click of a single button. It is incredible. If you own a PC, you simply must have a Snappy. You can get your Snappy Deluxe today at any computer store for just $139.95. And if you already own a Snappy, call Play for upgrade details at 1-888-888-PLAY, P-L-A-Y. See Snappy for yourself and discover the company behind this amazing technology. They're on the web now at www.play.com. That's P-L-A-Y.com. Well, all right, back now to Major Ed Dames, SciTech's Ed Dames. And Ed, so that tells us about plant pathogen. It is here now.
Art, you remember, we did not know, at SciTech, we did not know the contents of that cylinder.
Yes, I recall.
We knew it was organic, we knew that it would eventuate in killing plants, but we did not know if we were dealing with a virus, bacteria, fungi, mycoplasma. We had no idea.
And so now you know it's fungus now.
We know it's a fungus, but it's a new genus of fungus. It's some type of a super blight. And again, we'll work some more on it, but we may be overcome by events because I think this is going to go through certain plant communities, like stuff through a goose, beginning in Africa. And again, because it was disseminated so high and it was very high in the atmosphere, we think at least 20,000 feet where we're detecting some of these spores, then the trade winds will quickly carry this in a matter of weeks. To the Caribbean and Latin America. So we're dealing with a new genus of fungi, and we may actually just see it occur before SciTech finishes any more work on identifying its characteristics.
All right.
Now, fungi produce, many species of fungi produce mycotoxins, and those are poisonous to people. So if you eat, if one ingests an infected plant, infected by a fungi that produces mycotoxins, then people and cattle, for instance, will become very ill. So it's a, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't type of situation with an infected plant. So this is a very serious thing. Whoever sent this special delivery package engineered it. It was quite an ingenious thing in terms of a military weapon.
Do you think that our scientists, when the effects begin to set in, will understand where this came from, or will they simply suggest that it, is a new product of nature?
I think they'll simply call it a new genus of fungi. There's really no way for, and I would never ask the scientific community to accept SciTech's etiology of this particular disease vector. Indeed, it was very, very difficult for me as a businessman to make this kind of an announcement. You can imagine what a board of directors or even my staff thought about, but ethically, what does one do? We had this information, we knew, we stood by it, and so I decided to put it on the streets.
All right. And on the streets it is, in more ways than one. Now, another item would be the solar precursor event. Where are we with that?
Well, by the way, if we could cut off tonight, it's because, you know, we had an X-class flare on the 23rd.
I know it.
2 days ago. So
I know it, and it's due to hit
Right about now.
So there was everybody should know, an X-class event on the sun is really serious.
Well, if we're cut off tonight and you lose one of your comsats, your communication satellites,
right.
I did not do it. It's not my fault. But your conspiracy theorists will, of course, have a rich field. Actually, the maximum geomagnetic effects, the energetic particles.
Right.
Some protons will hit right about now. So while you're on the air, while we're on the air here.
It figures.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, are you saying this could be the precursor event itself?
No, I am not. I am not sure what the precursor event will be, except that we know it will be at least an X-class flare. At least meaning it could be a very large X-class flare. That's all that we know, is there will be a precursor. It will be big, and we think a lot bigger than the one on the 23rd, which is a normal X-class flare. The kill shot, what we're calling a series of kill shots that we think is going to occur as early as 99, I want to talk about that. I want to make sure that your listeners understand that at SciTech, we say, our statement is that we predicate that kill shot upon the use of a nuclear weapon on the Korean Peninsula.
Well, that was going to be in the next place I was going to be going, because I've got news about Korea. I've got a lot of news
about
Korea.
But let me explain why.
All right.
The same degree of rigor was employed to determine the next use of a nuclear weapon, how and where, as was applied to this solar flare, the very large kill shot solar flare. So what I'm saying is this, in terms of credibility, if we do not observe, unfortunately, if we do not observe the use of a nuclear weapon, the next use of a nuclear weapon on the Korean Peninsula, then I would not give credibility to SciTech's prediction about a kill shot solar flare as early as 99. Is that understood?
It is, but I'm curious why you predicate one on the other.
Because the same degree of rigor.
Right. No, I understand
was used to do both. And if we're wrong about the nuclear weapon on the Korean Peninsula, then we are probably wrong about the kill shot too. Now, we believe at SciTech that we're not wrong.
Okay, but what does that mean in terms of, what will that mean to you in terms of protocols and what you're doing if it doesn't happen?
Well, these are predictive studies.
Now, yes.
There's two ways of using remote viewing. One is as a predictive tool, which takes very advanced skills that generally only reside here at SciTech, with some exceptions that I'll get into. And then as a problem-solving tool, what broke, what happened, who killed whom, where's the dead body, that type of a thing. The predictive tool, we can still describe events very accurately, as well as we can solving a problem that's contemporary. But what we can't do accurately is look at the time windows. We're very loose in time, 3 to 6 months minimally. It's very difficult to establish precise times in the future. We can describe events very accurately. For instance, we're stating that a nuclear weapon will be used on the Korean Peninsula. We believe that to be true, and it was pretty easy for us to ascertain. When that will occur is very difficult for us to do. The next use will be there. But we can only look at the scenario that we describe, which says that it will occur at a time when meetings break down between the North and the South, and the North is starving, and...
Can I stop you for a second?
Sure.
I've got some news about North Korea, and this really is serious stuff. This is dated April 21st. From the North Korean news agency. This is actually words from North Korea. Quote, we do not want war, but we never tolerate anyone who tries to hurt the dignity of our nation and the sovereignty of our country. If the United States persistently continues to seek war and confrontation, ignoring our efforts for peace, our people and army will answer its aggression with a thousandfold retaliation. End quote. And now I've got another article here that I read the other night indicating that there is now not just famine, Ed, in North Korea, but the North Koreans have begun to actually resort to cannibalism. Cannibalism. According to Doctors Without Borders, a 23-year-old North Korean refugee interviewed in China told of his neighbors eating their own daughter. It went on and said... An 18-year-old North Korean refugee also reportedly told of a neighbor who killed, salted, and ate an uncared-for orphan. And it goes on and on and on. There is cannibalism going on in North Korea. Good God.
All right, the North has absolutely no food left. There's no food left. And they have nothing to lose. I believe that they're going to go south for food. And if you see the rhetoric in the last several days, it has really picked up into a frenzy.
I'm watching it. Yeah,
and
I just read some of it.
There's nothing to lose. They have got to eat, and they're going to go south to find food. There's nowhere else to go on that peninsula.
So then if the talks were to begin to break down suddenly, that would be a signal that you could be hours or days from something horrible.
I think we're already hours and days from something horrible.
Really?
And I think the scenario that we know that the scenario will start as a ground war. How fast it will escalate to the use of a nuclear weapon, I don't know. But that it will be next, and that's what we stand by.
All right. Have you targeted North Korea to know that they possess nuclear devices?
I know that they possess them as a former intelligence officer.
Oh, you do?
Yes. In the early 90s, they had enough plutonium for 1.5 weapons. Now, they did not have a delivery system. They had one, but it really wasn't a viable one. However, the Chinese provided North Koreans with very viable, very effective delivery systems, and Russia provided the North Koreans with some very effective ways of bolting a weapon on to the Chinese systems. So, suffice it to say, there's at least one or two of those weapons, a nuclear weapon, and we are saying that this is a missile, by the way, not aircraft, truck delivered, or something like that.
Well, when they talk about aggression answered with a thousandfold retaliation, it sounds an awful lot like they're talking about some kind of weapon of mass destruction, obviously. And when you're talking about cannibalism in a country, that means they're way over the edge.
Well, you see this in a number of countries these days. You know, the Balkans are about ready to experience a war, and of course Africa has experienced cannibalism, even Russia to a certain degree. But in light of SciTech's TRV, Technic Remote Viewing Information, about the next use of military use of a weapon.
No, it's true. You made that prediction how long ago?
That was about 6 months.
That's
the,
right.
The prediction, we've had some long-term predictions, the jet stream dropping down to the ground years old.
I'm going to get to that one. I've got that one here.
We have a two-year-old prediction. It's been 2 years now since SciTech has said that a global economic collapse would occur in mid-98. And there's some evidence to suggest that may happen.
Well, if people were to look at the stock market right this minute, there's not much evidence. Yeah, it took a 76-point dump, whatever it was today, but that's nothing. It's gone over 9,100. That's a remarkable rise in the market.
Well, here's my take on that.
Okay.
My take is that, indeed, if you look at the U.S. economy, we're doing pretty well, especially the entertainment industry, and California is being bolstered by that, our economy here. But my take is that if the U.S. economy is like the superstructure of a shiny skyscraper, it's all the finished work. If you look at the skyscraper from a distance and you look up, you see the shiny structure. But the Asian economy is the foundation. And right now, the termites have chewed it right down to the ground. It's ready to crumble. And it's going to take down this big, shiny facade with it.
As a matter of fact, the business leaders in Japan are warning right now that Japan's economy is on the precipice and may well collapse. It seems almost impossible to me, Ed. I mean, you're just not very many years ago, we were saying the Japanese are going to rule the world. And now they are on the verge of a total economic collapse, and that's the head of Sony that said that.
Yes. Used the exact words that I used 2 years ago.
Yeah, what the hell? I mean, how could Japan, I know you're not an economist, but how could they have gone from rulers of the universe to the verge of total collapse in 1998? How can that happen?
Well, there are so many, it's such a complex system. That is why I like Technic Remote Viewing so much, because it cuts right to the quick. It's direct knowledge, and it can bypass all this red tape guessing and analysis. It is direct knowledge about what's coming down the pike. For a corporation, for instance, if one were to be researching a new product, whether it be pharmaceutical or a new deep space propulsion system, anything, the use of technical remote viewing can save millions and millions of dollars and point out the dead ends in research. And that is why I'm such a big advocate of TRV in the corporate arena. Although, the way the world is going now, I think people are going to have to use this for survival technologies. And many are. There are now thousands of people using TRV, learning from the tapes and employing it. And my suggestion is they use it for themselves.
To help themselves.
Mm-hmm. And what one might call survival technology, or as a survival tool.
Again, I'm going to try again. Not just Japan, but all of Asia is having this horrid problem right now economically. I mean, really awful. Japan on the verge of collapse, they're saying. And do you have any idea how this happened? I mean, is there any simple to understand answer you can give me about how they can go from the promise of the future and the rulers of the universe to the verge of collapse? I just don't get it.
All right, I'm not an economist. I can't do that. I can't do it. We can see the future. But I can't explain. It would be like, for instance, if I knew nothing about electronics,
right,
and I were to, and my television to me is something I could see and describe to you over the phone, but I would not have one. I would not be able to understand at all how it is making that phantasmagorical display of flashing pictures on the outside.
Well, I'm glad you cop to that, in fact. In other words, you can see it, but you don't understand why. And I don't either. I guess that would take a world economic expert, and even those people seem to have their own opinions, depending on who they are. You can get that many opinions. So I don't know. But you did call it, and it does look like it's occurring. Now, with the hints we see about Korea, or more than hints, I guess you would suggest that your prediction regarding the first use of a nuclear weapon is horrendously on track at the moment.
It's on track, unfortunately. I've got to get out of this doom and gloom business because I am getting a little bit tired of this. Really, that's why our recent project, we took on just a normal project. It's still a showstopper. That's the Amelia Earhart project, but it has nothing to do with doom and gloom.
You wanted to get away from some of this stuff.
Yes. Mm-hmm. These were all predictive things, and this one is, it's a nice one. It's of interest. Amelia Earhart is America's favorite missing person. It's been 61 years. Nobody has managed to find the aircraft wreckage. We're not going for her remains, by the way. We're going for her aircraft. This is a Lockheed Electra 10E. That we're going to go for the pinpoint location of that wreckage.
You believe the aircraft still is present physically somewhere? Wasn't hauled away and buried or something?
Based upon some technical remote viewing probes that we've done, some cursory research, we think the aircraft is relatively intact and findable.
All right. We'll talk about that and more when we come back. My guest is Major Ed Dame, SciTech's Ed Dame. Stay right where you are. You might want to pick up the phone and call a friend or a neighbor and let them know what's on the radio this night. Have you seen the news from Korea? The North Korean news agency is beginning to talk about war. Now, they do that, but not the kind of rhetoric that I'm seeing tonight. That, coupled with the obvious starvation and now cannibalism reports from North Korea, say they really are on the edge. We'll be right back.
The Talk Station, KSTP.
In the Kingdom of Nye on the Wild Card Line at area code 702-727-1295. That's area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Good morning, everybody. Major Ed Dame, SciTech's Ed Dames, is our guest. We've already covered a lot of ground, and we're just going to keep going because there really is a lot of ground to cover. Number again, 1-800-458-7134. Alaska, Hawaii, and Canada, call area code 918-687-0404. Or on the Internet, it's www.americangoldrose.com. All right, back now to Major Ed Dames. Major, somebody just sent me a fax. We were talking about the American economy being in such rosy condition right now. John sends the following. Dear Art, is Major Dames aware that after his last appearance on your program, which was also on a Friday, the following Monday, the price of gold began rising? Since his appearance, the price of gold has gone from $280 per ounce to $310 today. Now, that means somebody, Ed, knows something, because normally as the market rises, the price of gold will fall. But now, conversely, for some strange reason, even though the market seems to be, doing relatively well, in fact, stellar, people are beginning to buy gold. That means somebody knows something.
Art, I think you're going to see the price of gold go up to $2,000 an ounce before too long.
Wow.
Yeah.
$2,000 an ounce.
Or even higher.
That is not investment advice, folks. We don't give that, but that is a prediction.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Again, we covered Korea, which is in a mess right now. I'm getting these incredible, aggressive statements from the North Korean news agency talking now about war. They've got cannibalism going on in North Korea. They're on the edge. You have predicted they would be the first to use a nuclear device in modern time, I guess, if you call it modern time. And we have yet to see whether that will come true, but certainly the news is not good. Now, I want to ask you before we move on how you were conferred the title of Dr. Doom. How did you get that anyway?
Actually, I got it at the White House. I used to go over to the old executive office building and brief some of the White House staffers on the state of affairs and mostly in terms of foreign strategic weapons. By that, they're high value weapon systems.
Mm-hmm.
Biological warfare, directed energy. These are beam weapons.
Right.
Particle beam weapons, high-powered microwaves, and other more exotic things. Non-ionizing electromagnetic weapons. These are weapons that scramble brain waves at a distance. Those kinds of things.
We've got them. STS-50, as a matter of fact, if you look at the footage from STS-50, you can see one of these weapons being used.
Well, I can't comment on those things, as you might guess, but, you know, rail guns and all that kind of sexy stuff, but not ours, the other guys. And because of the various ways some of the things that I would brief at the White House were very scary. And to the staffers, for instance, how
sure.
Nations might consider using gangrene toxin and incorporated into benign bacteria that like tiny time capsules could be turned on at a distant time, and you would, or as I mentioned before, in fact, you know, there was a program that we did here on, and I mentioned that cobra venom incorporated genetically into certain benign bacteria that are found in the human gut.
Oh.
Somebody used that to write a book. I thought it was very interesting.
Oh, great. There's
a lot of line directors out there that are getting some good info out here. So you'll see lots of substance here in Hollywood.
All right.
That's how I got Dr. Doom.
That's how you were. So actually it was a White House staffer that conferred that upon you.
It was a White House staffer and a former CIA staffer.
Great, and it stuck, and it has stuck to this day. All right, I'm going to read something, and then we'll come back to you, Ed. The following from the San Francisco Examiner: as the Pacific atmosphere throws temper tantrums, scientists are discovering secrets of its bad behavior. Secrets, they say, that could, quote, change the face of West Coast forecasting, end quote. On Wednesday, researchers reported that the causes of this winter's deluge, actually deluges, plural, included a new type of weather front, and unexpectedly fierce tornado-like winds within the jet stream 7 miles above Earth. And they have found that the gales that shattered windows, trees, and rooftops from Southern California to the Oregon border stemmed partly from a separate and surprisingly strong low-level jet stream plunging close to the ground. And I could go on. This is quite a significant story. But it was fully, I think, 2 years ago that Major Dame said, I predict the jet stream will virtually come down on deck. We will begin getting unaccountably strong winds, and we will actually see the jet stream coming down on deck. Well, guess what? Score another one. The jet stream has come down on deck. It is happening now. You're aware of that, Ed?
Yes, I am. And as an adjunct to that, I mentioned that the tornadoes would be more horrific and much more frequent.
And they are.
And they're not over for the season yet, are they?
Oh, I know.
Watch out.
I know.
And they're going to be big.
We've been getting F4s, even F5s, the strongest you can get. Horrible, horrible. One went through Nashville, and I talked to the people in Nashville about it. Horrible tornadoes.
I'd like to say a couple more things about predictions and predictive data, and then I think I'd like to drop that subject and talk to you about some actually pursue some of the requests that you had on earlier shows about things that you wanted SciTech to look at. And
oh yes.
But one thing is, in earlier shows, in order to bring closure to this, I've mentioned that the pollinators are dying. Now, we know that from science. Science has been telling us that bees in particular.
Absolutely.
I want to talk about bees. Bees are dying off in the American Northeast because of the bee mite.
Right.
And probably in France, at least the speculation that they're dying en masse because of pesticides. But I will tell you why most of the bees are dying. In fact, right now I'm back in Los Angeles.
Yes, sir.
Not for long. And I've noticed that there are virtually no bees. No bees this year. Zero. And the reason for that is they are starving to death. I'll tell you why they're starving to death. Do you remember on a show about a year ago, one of your shows, I mentioned to you that the flowers in New Zealand were changing colors?
I do, sir.
And the reason for that was that so that they could attract bees, they could attract pollinators, because the ozone layer was being depleted so rapidly that the ultraviolet reflection was much being reflected differently off the petals of the flowers that the bees normally find as food.
Huh.
And in order for the flower, naturally, to attract bees again, it had to change its color so that to bring back the reflected spectrum into the bee's window of attraction so that the bee could be attracted to its food again.
Mm-hmm.
But I mentioned in that same program that this could not go on for too much longer or for much longer because the flower could adapt much faster to the loss of ozone and the increased rays of the sun. Than the bee. The bee is a much more advanced, higher developed system, biological system, and it cannot adapt that rapidly. And a point would be reached where the bees would no longer be able to see their food. Now, bees navigate using the sun. And they can see the sun through heavy cloud cover. If the cloud cover is too heavy or it's raining, the bees stay home.
Uh-huh.
But they still need to know where the sun is at all times. That's why their eye is polarized. And they use it to navigate. And when they come back to the hive, as we all learn in high school, they do this little dance. And in that dance is communicated information about where the food is that an individual may have found
right
when foraging. And all of this is keyed to the sun, the position of the sun. Now, the bees are being blinded. The ultraviolet rays of the sun that they see through heavy cloud layer,
oh.
The ultraviolet rays are blinding these insects, and they are starving to death because they can no longer transmit the information about where the food is.
Well, I've seen a lot of stories about this recently, about bee die-offs. I've got a whole bunch of stories about that.
But the scientific community does not yet
know
what SciTech knows.
They don't know why it's happening.
Yes, and now I'm stating that for the first time here, the reason it's happening is because of the aforementioned.
In addition, I would like somebody, you mentioned earlier this evening that there has been an X-class flare on the sun. And I would hope somebody out there would take a moment and go to an appropriate page and send me some information on that. I know that, in fact, has occurred. I've had several faxes, but I don't have the hard info on this X-class event, which is due to begin affecting us, probably is affecting us about now.
Right now.
And I would like somebody to fax me that so I can read it on the air. But your prediction about the weather changes, Ed, has been, unfortunately, dead on target. And I would think the weather changes would begin to affect the insect world as well. Here's another example, Ed. In the Southwest, on Dan Rather the other night, there was a big report that Arizona, on up through southern Nevada and moving north in Nevada, unfortunately toward me, is one of the largest, almost biblically large locust infestations that we have ever seen. I would imagine this would be part of the changes that are occurring, the weather perhaps. Could that be?
More than likely the wet weather. As you know, wet weather is responsible for large insect populations when the sun returns again. Locusts, by the way, have just about devoured the country of Madagascar from both ends.
Really?
Two separate groups. But I think more significant than locusts is, again, the idea of a very timely idea of a fungi, of a fungus. Fungus, all it takes is a wet night and warm sun on the next day, and that particular combination of a climate can destroy an entire grain crop, corn crop, depending upon the particular strain of fungus, overnight.
Well, in view of your successful prediction, unfortunately, regarding the winds and the weather, by the way, Sandeo, who monitors U.S. naval satellites in Australia, says he now sees what appears to be the beginning of an even larger El Nino heat buildup in the Pacific near Japan, which is where it begins. And he's predicting it's going to be even worse next year. Can you tell us what you think or what you know is going to happen to the weather throughout the next year or two or three?
No, I can't, Art. And in fact, I am so concerned about this solar event that, as I mentioned before, as far as I'm concerned, all bets are off in 99. And I'm going to turn over predictions to all of our remote viewers in the field who have been trained in Module 2.
Yes.
Module 2 skills, they have the necessary ability to predict what's coming. For instance, if they were to remote view the next North American disaster, all of them en masse would come up with the same thing because they've been trained to do that. And these are thousands of people. And I'm going to get to take the monkey off of my back by training a lot of other individuals to do this.
Yes, and to be fair, I want to give you an opportunity. There are three... Actually, two modules or three? Three modules.
There are two modules.
Two modules presently.
Presently. In fact, libraries are buying these in the United States.
Are they?
Yes, they are.
Now, these are modules, videotapes, that will train you how to do what Ed does, to actually remote view. And the first one is sort of an introductory module. I've seen them all, and I must say they are... exquisitely produced. Somebody really went out of their way to do a great job.
Well, our editor and director was just nominated for an Academy Award.
Really?
For the best documentary in 1997. That's Waco, The Rules of Engagement.
Oh, yes.
Same editor.
Yeah, exquisite production. There's no question about it. And so if people want to acquire or inquire about these modules, these videotapes, that literally teach you how to do this, how do they do it? What do they call? Where do they call?
Well, they can hit the button on your website that takes them over to our SciTech's website, or
right.
They can call a phone number, or they can write us. The phone number
is
1-888-878-0333.
What hours is that operative?
24 hours a day.
Even now?
Everywhere. So Canada, Hawaii, Alaska.
Oh, excellent. 1-888-878-0333. It's an easy number. And how else? They can go to the website.
They can go to the website, or they can write us at P.O. Box 3762 in good old Beverly Hills, California.
Right.
90212.
Gee, that's pretty close to 90210.
It is, unfortunately. But you know what, Art? We could not have gotten the talent to make those tapes as excellent as they were anywhere else.
It's true, isn't it?
So it is. I mean, this one thing I can say about Los Angeles, it's loaded with the...
I was really shocked, Ed. When I first got the tape, I frankly expected a pretty good, fairly professional tape from you, because I know that's the kind of work you do, but I didn't expect... the kind of quality that I got. I mean, I said, wow, somebody really did quite a production here. This is very well done.
And we poured a lot of money into it.
I'm sure you did. I'm sure you did. So anyway, again, I ask you this every time you're on, and I wonder if you have any update. Getting these tapes out and allowing people out there to do what you do, we're downline a little bit now, and you couldn't predict what effect it would have having so many people being able to remote view. Now, there must be quite a few of them out there by now. What effect is it having?
Well, first let me say that there are, I think there are a lot of people who have seen what SciTech has done, and there are a number, a tremendous number of dilettantes who are advertising themselves as instructors, as remote viewing instructors, that are popping up all over the place. So we must have done something right. But the bottom line is, if you want to learn this effectively, the way that we used it in military operations, in life or death operations,
right,
then you're going to have to get these tapes, because it's the only way to do it. And if you can't afford the tapes, then go to a library and see if the your library has ordered them. There are checklists inside the boxes that come with these tapes, and you'll need those too. But the effects that we've seen, I may be putting myself out of business quicker than I thought. I was going to give it maybe 5 years before I started to fear for my job. Well, it looks like it may be a lot sooner than that.
Well, but it's a good thing that you have.
Because there's a lot of talent out there that beats even what we had access to in the military and what I have access to in SciTech.
All right, hold tight. We're at the bottom of the hour. Major Ed Dames is my guest. This, of course, is Coast to Coast AM.
Broadcasting to 20 states and 5 Canadian provinces with 50,000 watts of Twin Cities Radio. You're listening to AM 1500 KSTP, St. Paul, Minneapolis.
AM 1500 KSTP.
Have a fax for Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. Send it to him at area code 702-727-8499. 702-727-8499. Please limit your faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now, here again is Art.
Once again, here I am, Major Ed Dames. SciTech's Ed Dames is my guest, and we'll get back to him in a moment. The Zeitung 5-1. Buy two, get one free when you call now. Tell him Art Bell sent you. All right, if I don't ask Major Ed Dames about this, I would be strung up. A million people have sent me faxes, Ed, wanting to know. You made a sort of passing reference. As you know, we're getting remarkable images now from the Cydonia region of Mars that would suggest that there is an ancient civilization that was on that planet one time. Remarkably old structures, difficult to see, but... generally, the geologists are seeing it, the astronomers are seeing it, they're saying it's unambiguous. Yes, indeed, there was life on Mars. And you, during one of our programs, said something in Mars, or on Mars, or in Mars, is waking up. And a million people want to know what it is, what you meant by that.
Well, I'll really have to go out on a limb on this one.
Well, you're usually pretty comfortable out there.
Yeah, this is way out there, though.
Something waking up.
As you know, we've actually, it's been 15 years since Richard Hoagland, I think, has published his book.
That's right.
And it's been 15 years of remote viewing, first as the military team. I used to slip these targets. As the training officer, I used to slip these targets to our military remote viewers and myself. To take a look at Mars, because we were curious, and they were great advanced training projects. You know, that was how I could legitimize looking at something that was of personal interest to me, using taxpayers' dollars.
Thank you.
And so it's been 15 years of looking at what Mr. Hoagland was interested in.
Yes.
And we did. And over that period of time, this decade and a half, all of our remote viewers, both coordinate remote viewers in the beginning and technical remote viewers in SciTech, I founded the company in 1989 and developed technical remote viewing about 8 years later. And the reason I say that is because TRV is an extremely accurate tool, and CRV was loose. Sometimes we were on target, and other times we were loosely on target. That's not the case with technical remote viewing. Our viewers were always attracted to one aspect of in the Cydonia region, not the so-called face or the D&M pyramid or the other names that Richard Hoagland gave the various structures and others did, but something that in popular literature has come to be known as the tetrahedron. If you look at photographs of the Cydonia region, you'll see a large crater. A large crater, and in some of Hoagland's books and photos that he has in his book, you will see a very skinny, thin pyramidal object, or as NASA chooses to call it, a non-fractal image, perched on the lip of this crater. This particular feature has been termed the tetrahedron. Interestingly, when one remote views the Cydonia region, just as a generic topical search using that remote viewing search term, all of the remote viewers go to that particular feature. Now, if one were to take a photograph of the region and circle, let's say the D&M pyramid or the wall or the face, that would constrain unconscious to give us details about that particular feature. But if we look at the whole region, we home in. Our unconscious goes to what turns out to be the most unique thing. Novelty acts as a stimulus to consciousness, by the way. Experimental psychologists are well aware of that. Mm-hmm. Unconscious is the same. We go to this particular pyramid. Now, on the outside of this pyramid, which turns out to be an artificial structure, I say artificial, it's man-made. I use that term loosely, but it's man-made. It's created by a civilization that I've talked about before, the original Martian race, long gone. But inside this particular hollow structure, there is something moving. Now, something mechanical. In fact, it is electromechanical.
Oh, my.
It is like a pendulum, like an electronic clock. All right? We don't quite understand it. We have all through the years tried to discern what it is and gather information about it.
Okay, when you said originally something is waking up, the implication was biological, but what you're telling us now is it is mechanical in nature.
I haven't discussed what's waking up yet.
Oh, sorry.
But I want to talk to you about this thing that's moving in there.
Please.
We've begun, in-house only, and this is the first time I've talked about this in public, in-house, that is, within SciTech over the years, we have called this particular structure a tachyon station.
Tachyon station.
Because it appears to be involved in time travel. It is like a relay station. Things are sent through it from other places.
Oh, now you're talking my language.
Okay. So it deals with whatever this device is, for lack of a better word, it is connected in some way with time travel. Okay?
Oh, my.
Now, near this particular facility and underground in a chamber connected to this particular feature by a long, long underground passageway.
Yes.
Are spheres about, I'd say, less than a foot in diameter. And in those spheres are something like, well, for lack of a better word, homunculi, little fetuses.
Little fetuses?
Now, you see what I mean about going out on a limb?
I do, but I'm fast. Little fetuses?
Yeah, homunculi, little templates of humanoids. not fetuses per se, but the template of a humanoid. In other words, sort of like a cookie cutter humanoid seed, let's say, embryonic form.
Wow.
All the same. Each one the same.
Things that were, do you know the, in other words, were they left there for?
I have no idea. I'm giving you the raw data for
okay.
what it's worth.
All right.
And I have not explored this. And the reason why we have not explored it is because what good would it do in terms of remote viewing? It's an adventure. But in my business, we have to have feedback. And we've got to be able to validate our results. And until somebody goes up there and sees this, if this sounds like science fiction.
Huh, it does. Well, so when you say something is waking up, you're detecting some sort of change in the nature of the stasis of these things.
Okay,
these fetuses,
let me continue.
Yes.
Also in this region, near this particular feature, this tetrahedron, are robots that are moving. They're moving on the surface of Mars, and they're moving underground. There are different types of robots, and they appear to be caretaking this particular area. And what they're caretaking most of all are these spheres, these small spheres, within which are these homunculi, for lack of a better word.
Oh, okay? Smokes. Yes, okay.
And in the last 2 years, these robots have been, well, let's call it shaking and baking these little spheres and waking up and bringing to life whatever is in them. And I'm going to leave it right there because
oh,
we don't
great.
Understand the rest. It's
oh,
totally beyond our ken art. And, you know, there are many things in the universe out there. I mean, we're only alive for a short period of time. And, you know, God only knows literally what's out there. So I that's the raw data. The first time we've ever reported it publicly, and I don't know what you want to do with it, but I'm not going to do anything with it. Let the archaeologists on the first mission, if they make it, go under there and find out what's going on, or these things may arrive at our doorstep.
would you think that a manned mission to Mars would be, at this point, with what we know, what we've seen, and or based on what you've said, be justified?
I think it would be justified based upon what we will probably be able, what NASA will probably be able to conclude in the next few weeks. But my concern is these robots. I'm not sure that we're supposed to be in this area. It may be off limits. I suspect, based upon work that we've done years earlier, whatever these spheres are, and whatever is in them, or what they may become, may arrive here prior to us getting there.
Great. Do you get any sense at all, and now this is probably something you can't answer, but do you get any sense at all of an evil nature or the nature of these things? Anything at all?
They appear to be just the embryonic form of humanoids that have been in hibernation for a long, long time. Now, there's other tangential information that we have, but it can't be validated. There's no feedback. So, I, you know, as a responsible officer in my company, you know, I can only go out on a limb so far.
Right.
This is already as far as I want to go.
All right. All right. We'll let people chew that one over.
I will say one more thing, however.
Yes,
they
sure.
These particular embryonic forms appear to be connected in some way with the earlier Martian race, and that's all I know that I want to say.
I can't resist this earlier Martian race of humanoid type creatures.
They were humanoids. They were humans.
Humans.
Just, yeah.
Virtually humans? In other words...
Yeah, I would call them humans, even though they breathe different air gas mixtures than us.
I'm asking is it Martians are us? In other words, are we the descendants of whatever was on Mars?
It's difficult for us as remote viewers to put those pieces together because the spans of time are so vast. It appears to be at least a million years between the time where those structures that are being photographed today and when they were habitated, it appears to be somewhere around a million years, and that's just a long, long time for us to try to fill in the gaps as remote viewers. It's hard to say which came first, the Homo sapiens or this other race, the chicken or the egg.
All right. Scientists just the other day discovered the formation, Ed, of a sun, a new sun, and the gases that are beginning to form. They've actually seen it into planets. Now, that would suggest that planets around suns are a common, not an uncommon occurrence. That would further suggest that the probability of life elsewhere is extremely high. Extremely high. In fact, it almost has to be out there. And I know that you've gone to the Pacific and you've begun to initiate Project Starman, that which caused you to fall off the cliff here a little while ago. Explain to everybody, if you would, why you're doing it and what Project Starman is.
Project Starman is an attempt to gain the attention of the robots that are on Mars.
Oh, my God. You never said that before.
No, I haven't.
To gain the attention of the robots on Mars.
All of the military, all of my military background really comes to play here. I was a science and technology officer. My job was to discern how foreign systems operate. When we could not defeat these high technology systems, I went for the operator, the human being inside them, or the human being deep under the ground that controlled them. Right?
Sure, sure.
And so now I'm using these same techniques to discern what kind of sensory systems are connected with these very sentient robots. These are thinking machines, how they operate, what attracts their attention, their modus operandi, to use, for lack of a better term, those kinds of things. And what we've done is put together some of the working parameters of their sensory system, what would attract them. And I don't want to go into my reasoning right now or how my intent to attract came about, but that is essentially what Starman is about, to attract the attention of these robots. While we're on the subject, there is a request that you had on an earlier program for SciTech to do, and that is to look at a Mexico City UFO. And before we leave tonight, I want to talk to you about our results on that.
Oh, absolutely. The video coming from Mexico is astounding. And we're actually in the middle of a UFO flap right now. They're being seen all over the place. I got a call from Peter Davenport earlier today. Remarkable sightings over Seattle. All parts of the country right now are seeing all kinds of things in our sky. And I talked to a person, Ed, earlier today, and I'm going to have him on the show in the next couple of weeks. I'm waiting for some documentation. But he designed some of our military satellites. And he said, you might be curious to know whether or not our satellites are seeing objects traversing our atmosphere at tremendous speeds. And he said, I can tell you, though I shouldn't, that the answer is absolutely yes. We have all the photographic evidence you could ever want of these objects moving at as fast as 25, 30,000 miles an hour through the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got other corroborating evidence. But I've got a fellow who actually designed these satellites who says he's got the goods, that in fact this is occurring. And so that would suggest we are on an ongoing basis at being visited.
It goes beyond that. Here's an interesting note. There was an earlier series of observation satellites. I don't want to go into nomenclature right now because I'll burn badly if I do. But an earlier series of surveillance satellites used to pick up what this gentleman is describing. These very fast walkers.
Fast walkers. That's it. All right.
And then all of a sudden, a very interesting thing happened. Very very funny. A new generation of satellites was placed up in space to replace this earlier generation.
Right.
It had better bandwidth and better camera angles, those kinds of things, better resolution. But and the old series was still up there. Now all of a sudden, the photography ceased. The photography of these fast walkers ceased on the old system, and now appeared on the new system in a different bandwidth.
Really?
Which implies that an intent, that whatever is out there knew that exactly what it was doing and changed its reflectivity.
So that we could
observe. So that we could see it. And if somebody's messing with us, in other words.
In other words, somebody wants us to see them.
Somebody wants us, not only wants us to see them, but they're monkeying with us. They're playing games with us.
That's almost exactly what this fellow said, the satellite designer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to have a hard time getting him on the air because he's got a lot to lose. But
he does. Mm-hmm.
But he told me the truth, and I happen to believe it because we've seen reports from observatories. And video has occasionally caught these objects. There's no question about it. There are things moving through the atmosphere at unbelievable speeds.
Yes, yes. Now some of them are ours. Don't forget, Aurora is out there, and it's darn fast. So if you see something hopping around, that's probably, Aurora. And it's like a bat out of hell. But that's just one of many, many things that are out there, and some of them aren't from around here.
All right. Well, I want to get you on the phone with some of my people, but I do want to cover the Mexico. You say you did do the Mexico.
Yes, we did.
All right. Yes. I want to know about that and a couple of other items, and then we'll go to the phone. So
Okay. Hold
on, Ed. You've got a good long break here. Take a breather, and we'll be right back. Pretty heady stuff, huh, folks? My guest is SciTech's Major Ed Dames. He's a remote viewer. Somehow little fetuses on Mars being cared for by robots beginning to wake up. Great. And the locusts are on the way. Could be quite a weekend. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell, and we'll be right back.
The Talk Station, AM 1500 KSTP.
1500 KSTP.
With Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, 1-800-618-8255.
Good morning. I've got the news on the Sun. There is no question about it. There has been an X-class event on the Sun, and I'll read you what I've got. My guest is Major Ed Dames, and he'll be back in a moment. IPS propagation warning. This comes from the Australian Forecast Center. Degraded HF propagation conditions expected from the 25th through the 27th of April, 98. Mid to high latitudes, especially during local night hours and after local dawn. Also, shortwave fadeouts may become more frequent as the solar region that produced the recent X1 flare rotates onto the visible disk. I have a potential satellite anomaly warning. Current conditions. Energetic protons at greater than 10 MeV have increased to event levels of 10 PFU following a class X2.1 proton flare from active sunspot region 8100. Proton densities are still slowly climbing. This may or may not affect the current shuttle mission. Electrical upset activity could occur on spacecraft in high altitude and high inclination orbits that cross through the high latitude auroral and polar regions. So, indeed, over the next hours, the effect of this X-class flare is going to be felt. Now, right now, folks, for those of you here on Earth, you should not be overly concerned. I think that many would suggest it's a good time to stay out of the sun. But there has been a rather major event, and I wanted to get that on the air, and so there is the news. I have additional big news. Now, I hope that everything holds together. We've been waiting hours for this. Richard Hoagland has remarkably, wonderfully enhanced photographs from the third set of Cydonia pictures that were taken earlier yesterday now. These are nothing short of staggering and remarkable. Normally, I find it very difficult to see the kind of geology that Richard sees, and that, in fact, geologists see, because I don't have a trained eye to look at this kind of thing. But even I can see a massive tetrahedral ruin that cannot possibly be, I repeat, cannot possibly be a natural formation. It simply cannot be. If you want to see what I'm talking about, now, finally, Keith has returned and he has posted them. And if you want to see them, here's how you see them. Go to www.artbell.com. Scroll down to the name Richard Hoagland. He was a guest earlier tonight, raving about this. Scroll to Richard Hoagland's name, click on it, and then just wait, and I hope the websites can handle all of the traffic that's about to occur. Because what's up there is nothing short of staggering. So I repeat, whatever else you do, whatever else you do tonight or tomorrow, get to a computer, go to my website, scroll down to the name Richard Hoagland, and take a look at each one of the items marked new. It will blow your mind. And they are up there as of right now. And I'm simply glad that I got the jump on everybody. And I made sure that I got to see them before I told you they were there. So that's quite a bit of stuff that I just had to get out. We will, of course, get back to Major Ed Dames in just a moment. And it is specifically, by the way, there was no coordination here at all. It is the tetrahedral form on Mars. Just before I go to commercials, Ed, do you have access to a computer?
Yes.
If you're able to do it and you're in a position to do it, by all means, go to my website, scroll down to Richard's name, click on that, and when you see the tetrahedral shape that he's got from the new photographs there, I guarantee, Ed, it's going to validate everything you've said and blow your mind.
Now, this is the D&M pyramid, or this is the actual tetrahedron that I've been
studying? Massive tetrahedral ruin.
Okay, I'll take a look.
All right, good. Let me go to commercial. Now, I've talked to you, I don't know how for how long now, about Snappy. I love this company, Play Incorporated. I love them. They write the best manuals of any company that has ever produced anything that has anything to do with a computer. That's an honest-to-God compliment from me. It is open all night, so call Tax Resources right now at 888-82-AUDIT. Oh, you know, this I ran that extra commercial just so I could sit here and look. This is the first time that I have looked at pictures of this kind that have been put up there and gone, oh my God, there is no way in hell nature did that on Mars or anywhere else. Oh my. So if you get an opportunity to get on the website, oh my, what we're looking at on Mars, thanks to the third set of photographs, they're going to have to do more photographs of the Cydonia region. But now I see what the faxers said. Can there really be any question at all about this? Are these really? It's just impossible. Back now to my guest, Ed Dames. Ed, are you there?
I'm here.
Have you made it up there by any chance?
Art, I can't do that. I'm in my VP's office, and she's got this place wired in a certain way. And
I understand.
We'll get disconnected.
I understand. All right. Well, we'll probably get some reaction tonight. Boy, what remarkable photographs. I mean, you would look at these, Ed, and you'd go, Well, you'd say something we couldn't repeat on the air.
Oh, don't forget, Art, I've been looking at that structure for 15 years.
But Ed...
Inside and out, Art.
Uh-huh. Wow, I'm just say it again. Wow. I'm looking at the outside of it right now, and I'm going, wow. So the first opportunity you have, you've got to take a look.
I promise I will.
And if your vice president can get up there on another computer and print this out for you and bring it to you during the course of the show, even that would be great. All right, look. Your company took a look at the remarkable goings-on down in Mexico City. What did you find?
Well, what we did was we actually used the I never saw the actual video, but we used a clip from your website of which I thought was rather spectacular, of one of these. I think there were three or four clips that you had, frames from this Mexico City UFO,
which showed a saucer seemingly passing behind high-rise buildings in Mexico City.
That's right. We used the frame that it appeared that from frame to frame that the object was moving from the left to the right.
Mm-hmm.
We used the frame just prior to the object moving behind the building. That's the frame that we used. And we used that as a remote viewing target. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, this is what we've got. You're familiar with an Etch-a-Sketch, the toy, an Etch-a-Sketch?
No, I'm not.
I am.
Turn
the two little knobs and
yes.
line is drawn.
I recall.
Okay, it's a two-dimensional type of a pictographic toy. Think of a television set. It does the same thing. There's an electron gun and it scans and rasps back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
You think that you're seeing a moving picture, but all you're seeing are these lines, and they're moving very rapidly back and forth, creating the illusion of a flat moving picture. Right?
Right.
Okay. Now, I want you to think of a three-dimensional Etch-a-Sketch or a three-dimensional television, very
okay.
much like an electron cloud
okay.
around an atom.
Yes.
The electron orbits the atom, but it actually takes on the idea of a cloud, an electron cloud. And it moves so fast, it gives us the illusion in an electron microscope of being just a cloud. Well, that's what your UFO was. It really was.
Cloud.
It really was an alien object, but... it took on the appearance of a saucer. In fact, it was created by the same tool that is used to construct the crop circles, a small sphere about a foot and a half in diameter, moving very, very rapidly. Very, so rapidly that it create an Etch-a-Sketch fashion to etch out in the air this idea of a saucer. In three dimensions.
Oh, wow. That's remarkable.
Now, optically, if you look at the edges of this, and there has been optical analysis done.
Right.
There's some very interesting enigmatic features about the edges of this structure that optical analysts cannot explain. And that explains it. That's the reason why it's created by this sphere that's moving, like, well, very, very rapidly to create the illusion of a disc. And a saucer with
huh.
people there. But in fact, it's this very same tool, this very unique tool that another race uses for a variety of functions here on Earth, one of which is to create crop circles.
You once, I think, referred to crop circles as markers. Some kind of markers.
Yeah, they're temporal markers. They leave... on another program, I referred to them as a temporal marker. They are purposely made in perishable media to mark that specific day for vehicles that travel in time.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, if you're traveling in time and you're looking for a specific day, and in the central register, let's say that you want to return to January 6th, 1998.
Right.
And on that particular day, in another mission, you laid a crop circle down, or you had your tool, this little tool, programmed to make a specific crop circle that appeared a specific way in a register that you have on board your craft.
Mm-hmm.
Or on board, or somewhere else. And you want to return to this specific day and navigate back to that day and make sure that you're in the same point in time again, locally, in a local area and time space. Well, one can be assured of doing that if you come back and see a nice, fresh crop circle, because these crop circles degrade very rapidly. They're purposely placed in perishable media, like grain and wheat. And so when you see a fresh one and that matches the register that you have for that particular day in that particular place, then you know you're back at that area on January 6, 1998, locally.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That's just amazing. And that really is what crop circles are. How much confidence do you have in that?
That's one half of what they are. The other half is that they are artistic in nature for another reason, and they do communicate ideas. They're not just a marker. It's as if another race took advantage of a functional tool and made it into an information device. So, for instance, if we were to use traffic signs and make them aesthetic rather than just the mundane, 10 miles to Muncie, type of a sign, if we made the signs artistic and allowed them to communicate other information, then that would be similar to what the crop circles are.
Mm-hmm.
They're both those things.
I know that you rarely do social forecasting, but Ed, the photographs that are just coming up now on Richard's page, just came up, are so striking, so unambiguous, so obviously artificial, that there's about to be a big impact on society, a big, big impact. I mean, as society realizes we're not alone, there have been others, or there are others, either way, there's going to be this gigantic disruption in the force, and I'm using very broad terms here that people will understand, in the religious community, the scientific community. What's going to happen?
I think ordinarily, on a normal, healthy world, a lot would happen. Immediately, we would put together a mission to Mars and affect that as soon as possible. But I think in this case, we're going to be overcome by events locally. And the impact of this wonderful, magnificent discovery in our time, in our lives, will be quickly overcome by events that are horrible and horrific in nature.
So, in other words, we're barely going to have time to focus on this because some pretty awful things are about to happen.
Yes.
Is there, do you do, you know, in the military, they do forecasts of, they used to play all kinds of war games.
Yes, we do.
How many people would die in a nuclear war and blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
Have you done that kind of forecasting with regard to what you see coming?
No.
That sounded like a sort of a tentative no. It's like, no, I don't want to tell you.
I don't want to tell you because I don't want to discuss how many people are going to die, and I'd rather others find out for themselves.
Which is why you've got the tapes.
Yes.
All right.
And others can. In fact, many people are reaching the skill level now where they are able to do forecasting, something as simple as the next global catastrophe or the next North American disaster is a very easily doable thing for people who have had Module 2 for 4 months.
Well, I've got to give you this. You have acted as you said you would. You said you would move to the Pacific, and you've done it. I mean, you've done it. You're there.
I've done it for two reasons, Art. One was a selfish reason. And that was for the same reason that I've told other people, you know, warned other people, don't be in built-up areas when the stuff hits the fan. Be near sources of fresh water. Be in isolated communities that are where like-minded people are. So one of the reasons I did that was to find a sanctuary for my family. And my own loved ones.
No, I understand that. And it makes all the sense in the world to me. I am so frankly stunned by what I'm seeing right now that it's really kind of hard for me to contain myself. And it's so strange that just before these pictures went up, you talked about the tetrahedral item on Mars specifically as the most interesting, the most intriguing. It's almost like they're, and I'm telling you, the photographs are so good that you'd swear somebody faked them. But I know Richard better than that. He doesn't fake things. It's real.
Well, for years I have argued with one of the reasons I formed SciTech and got out of the military was because I could not, there was no way to convince the Department of Defense and the CIA that there really was artificial structures on Mars and that they really did contain the kinds of things that we were doing.
Boy, are you right, and boy, do we have the evidence. Ed, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll break right here. This is astounding. You've got to see it, folks. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
The wild dogs cry out in the night as they grow restless, longing for some solitary company. I know that I must do what's right. Sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus above the Serengeti. I seek to cure what's deep inside, frightened of this thing that I've become.
Kingdom of Nye, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. From east of the Rockies, call Art at 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, at 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may fax Art at area code 702-727-8499. Please limit your faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now again, here's Art.
Once again, here I am, and my guest is Major Ed Dames. SciTech's Ed Dames. You'll have a chance to ask him a question coming up in a few moments. However, I'm telling you, the new Mars photographs, I can't use the words on the air that describe my surprise when I saw them, and I saw them just a few moments ago. Here is Richard Hoagland. I couldn't resist. Hey, Richard. Holy smokes. Unbelievable. I mean, what I see here in the first three photographs, and there's so much more to see, but I see it. All of a sudden, finally, I see it. I see the shapes. I see the forms. I see the buildings.
Now we can get into what does it mean. And I don't want to disagree with Ed, but I think that this is big enough to change history. The future is not going to be what we think it was going to be 2 days ago or 1 day ago. This is a lever big enough to change the world and for the better.
Now you tell me that Professor Van Flandren has seen these, right?
Mm-hmm.
And said what?
He actually started looking at the tetrahedron last night. I urged him before one of his briefings today, and he said, I see it.
Yes, that's exactly, for a change, Richard, I can agree and say the same thing. Oh, my God, I see it. Finally, I see it.
Well, one of the advantages is we're dealing with solid surfaces. We're not dealing with a lot of glass. There is glass down there, by the way, and I'm working on something now that's going to be even more mind-blowing because I'm going to show you the reflections off the glass grid that's suspended above the city.
Well, I certainly have seen reflectivity the camera couldn't handle.
There's a very high reflectance on certain of these structures, which is far beyond normal Martian, rocks. Malin has told us that Mars is pretty dull.
Yeah.
Well, this stuff in some parts is not dull. In fact, it's speculatively reflecting the sun right back into the camera like a sun glint off a windshield.
Yep.
And we'll just keep doing over the next several days. We'll put up more images and more images. And
well, these are mind blowers, Richard. They're real mind blowers. You've finally done it. You've really done it. So the average person go up there and look and say, whoa.
Well, we've all done it. Remember, without the Art Bell audience, we would not be seeing these pictures, ladies and gentlemen. You are responsible.
All right. Richard, I've got to run, but thank you.
Thank you.
And everybody get up there. I'm telling you, go to my website before the weekend is out, www.artbell.com. Scroll down to the name Richard Hoagland. Click on it. And take a look at the first three photographs. And if that doesn't cause you to sit down and paradigm think, then you're blind. And I've argued, you know, with Richard in the past. The quality of the images we have, I just haven't been able to make out the same thing he has. I have respected the geologists, the astronomers, who have said these are going to show things that are obviously not natural. I've respected those points of view, and I do now. But I couldn't see it. Tonight, for the first time, I looked at them, and I guarantee you I said something I could not repeat on the air. You better go take a look. Anybody out there want a more powerful car? Sure you do. But the fat. Well, this is a really exciting night. Really exciting. And we're about to allow you to ask Ed Dames any question that you can imagine. Ed, are you ready?
Ready.
All right.
One point, Art. I did see the photo. I just ran back from another office. All the way to the right of the large area photo.
Yes, sir.
All the way to the right. Where the lines converge, the white lines converge that are overwritten on the photograph.
Yes, sir.
That's the structure I'm talking about. On the small tetrahedron perched on that crater.
Isn't that remarkable? I mean, that's just remarkable, Ed.
Well, it's the start of something wonderful.
It certainly is. I mean, these are just astounding photographs, and I think a lot of the people who, like me, have average eyes, not archaeological eyes, are going to this time go, oh my, now I see. Anyway, here we go. East of the Rockies, you are on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Am I on?
You're on.
Oh, hi. This is Chris in Chicago.
Yes, hi, Cliff.
So I've been sort of a spontaneous remote viewer. I wasn't trained or anything, you know, for some time. And some years ago, I was made aware of a large object in the orbit of Mars. This is not one of the moons. This is something else, something artificial. And this thing, whatever it is, sees everything that comes and goes in the area in the vicinity of the planet. And it was through that I was made aware of some of the of our space shots, you know, when they were by, when they were sent to, was it to Mars? I predicted, you know, the exact date that they would show there. And it was through this thing. I don't know.
Whatever it is, circling. Ed, let us ask you about spontaneous remote viewers. Whenever we do a show like this, there are people who call up and say, I'm a spontaneous remote viewer. Can that really be, can they really accurately, without the protocols and the disciplines, understand and interpret properly what they're seeing?
No, not accurately. That can't be done. But spontaneous ESP, of course. Everybody has an innate ability, and some people are born naturals, but they still need to be reined in and have this rigor to become all stars and professionals. With regard to this gentleman's perception, the extrasensory perception about an object in the orbit around Mars, he is correct.
Oh.
If you remember, I mentioned before that the Russians actually hired SciTech in 1990 to determine what caused the loss of the Phobos 2 spacecraft, and this was the second in a series of Mars missions
Actually, Ed, there are photographs of a very, very large object approaching that spacecraft just before it went.
Yeah. Be careful, though, here, Art, because just because there's a big flash of light that looks like the reflected light off the surface of something does not necessarily mean that there was an object there. For instance, it could have been an electromagnetic impulse, let's say a particle beam that hit the camera, right, and not the reflection off of the surface of something outside the spacecraft. So we have to be very careful about those preconceived notions.
But you're saying he is correct. There is something large.
Yes, he is correct. There's something in orbit around Mars that is one of those sentient robots, and it communicates with things on the surface that rise and lift off and move around vertically and horizontally, laterally.
Wow. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, this is Doug from Salt Lake.
Hi, Doug.
Hi, Art, Ed. A certain remote viewer said that Ed was his control, and they remote viewed a couple of subjects. I'd like him to express his details on them. And one was God, and the other, the Galactic Federation.
I don't need to mince words. His name's Courtney Brown, and everybody knows the history with Courtney, right?
Right.
So that's who you're talking about, correct?
Right.
And indeed, Courtney Brown did, for a period of time, work with Major Ed Dames, and then they parted ways, and Courtney modified some protocols and came up with some things. And so what is it you want to ask?
Well, I was wondering if he saw the same things that Courtney saw, or if he had more details, or et cetera.
All right. That's a fair enough question. The early work that you did with Courtney Brown.
I don't remember what Courtney got on against the target of God, but the Galactic Federation was a term that I first used in the with the military team. In fact, Mel Riley, one of these countries' first remote viewers, who I later trained in coordinate remoting, was the first one that I ever gave this particular cue to see. And it was what we call today a topical search. It could perhaps be a false premise that there's no such thing as a Galactic Federation. But in fact, there was. And we were going after the headquarters. And we described a particular world that was very science fiction-y. But what can we do with that kind of information? Really nothing. It's just there's nothing we can do with it. We can't go to that place to verify it. We can use it as grist for a book, but I don't know what else to say about it.
There was a very serious incident with regard to Hale-Bopp that I know you know as much about as I do, or maybe you don't, actually, but I know you know the rough story, and you know that there was a photograph promised, not delivered, a photograph proven to be a fraud, and all the rest of it. Did you ever go back and do any work on the source of that photograph?
And no, we've never looked at the source of that. I've instructed many of my students how easy it is to target something like that, and if Courtney would have known the right protocols, it would have been easy for him to know that he was dealing with a fake, for instance. What we do at SciTech is we just simply take the photograph, and if we're interested in a specific object in it, a point of light. Now, remember, just a point of light. We circle that object and use it as a target, remote viewing target. If it turns out to be a star, we're going to know that. A planet, we're going to know that. Mm-hmm. An object, we're going to know that. If it turns out to be a fabrication, we find ourselves sketching and describing the inside of a room wherein which someone is working and fabricating a film. And embellishing film directly. So, but Courtney didn't know that. He assumed that this was an object behind Hale-Bopp and targeted that idea, and ended up with a bunch of nonsense and spurious data, which he tried to pigeonhole into a preconceived notion. So it was a doomed project from the start.
All right.
Prudence Calabrese went right along with it. In fact, she was the primary endorser of that, unfortunately, his lieutenant at the time.
Actually, Prudence Calabrese and Professor Courtney Brown, I understand now, are on the outs. And I don't know much more about it than that, but that's the source of many, many internet messages now. A first-time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Yes, Major Dames. This is Bob in Menlo Park, California.
Shoot.
Yeah, I was curious of the magnitude of this economic collapse you're foreseeing before the end of the summer. I mean, are all the stock markets going to close? All the banks going to close?
Yeah, we don't know. All we know is that it's global. 2 years ago, we knew that it would be global and that it would be pretty serious. And in terms of magnitude, I do not know.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, this is Stephen from San Clemente, California.
Hi, Stephen.
I'd like to ask Major Dames if he's ever heard of dynamic adaptive strategy, the new type of psychic type clairvoyant thing that I have innovated, because he seemed to think that he was the only kid on the block earlier when he said that his company is the only thing that can do that. My new idea with the dynamic adaptive strategy is to put a timeline on things, and it's something that he said he was a little bit weak on with his remote viewing, because DAS, I can predict something down to the exact minute.
Oh, all you need to do is establish a track record and prove it.
It's already been done. Would you like to hear my accomplishments?
I would like to know the source of your predictions prior to their occurrence.
Well, the source of them is from my own mind.
I see. All right. Well, then you are, sir, a legend in the spot you just indicated, but we can't prove it beyond that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Hi there. Thank you very much, Art. I have a couple things to ask. First, a comment and a question.
Okay, where are you?
This is Chris in Seminole, Florida.
All right.
I spoke to Ed on a past call, on a past show that he was on, and I asked him basically if there was any way in which remote viewing could be blocked. And
oh, yes.
He said that angels were able to accomplish this, and that's something that, even though, Art, you gave me the opportunity, I didn't take it to comment further if you asked if I had any further questions for him. Really, that is the case, that angels do seem to have the ability to put up a block that, I mean, I'm just saying from personal experience, that is basically a for-your-own-good block. In certain cases, like, you know, if someone can't emotionally take something, about angels, you know, their actions, I think they should be studied a little further, but their actions and their thoughts are synonymous. Their ability to perform, you know, what seems to be the miraculous, is just something that, you know, we can learn a lot from if we were to remote view them perhaps further. And the second thing was that...
All right, well, is there anything specifically there you want the Major to comment on?
If he has done any remote viewing on how angels work and how they perform what they do, why they do.
All right.
And also...
well, one thing... Oh, slow up. One
okay,
thing at a time. Major?
All of my work, my contemporary work, personal work, not corporate work, my personal work deals with just that, angels and the angelic human alliance, I call it. That's it. That's all that I do personally these days.
All right.
Using remote viewing on a personal level.
All right. Your next question?
Yeah, that's good to hear. You ask people to have a track record, and really I'm more interested in teaching people, you know, just how to go about, you know, spiritually accomplishing what you accomplish.
I don't ask people to have a track record, but if they call me up like the caller did a few minutes ago and they say, look, what the Major does is nothing, I can predict things down to the minute, and I ask them where the track record is, and they say in their own mind, that's where the conversation has got to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
And I'd also like to know, since he said in my last call that you have you've been blocked by angels for whatever reason, I'd like to know what type of input you got. Was it clairvoyant? Was it clairaudience? Or just what was it that led you to believe? And maybe was it audio? Was it verbal
information? No. It was the remote viewing protocols that we use. We could not describe the target. We could not lock on to the target.
Hmm.
No matter what we did, we were not able to acquire our remote viewing target. And when I turned this process back on to the agency, back on to what the mechanism that was interfering with this, and this was about 1984, I realized there was something that I termed in those days an active agency that was editing. I used the word edit in 1984, editing the information. And I was more than intrigued. In fact, more than intrigued, because some of these things were military operations. And, you know, I needed to know why our protocols, our tried and true protocols, were not working in these specific instances. And that's when I turned it back onto the operating system. The protocols looking back at itself to find what, for all intents and purposes, to make a long story short, we're the active agency. We're angelic in nature.
All right, good answer. Hold on, Ed. You've got a good long break through the top of this hour. I want to do two things very quickly. I want to tell all of you, no matter what else you do, before this weekend ends, I'm telling you, go to my website, www.artbell.com. Scroll down to the guest area. You'll see the name Richard Hoagland. Take a look at the brand new Mars photographs. They will blow your mind. For the first time, Art Bell says he sees it. If I see it, you'll see it. If that's not an artificial object, then I don't know what would be declared to be one. That's all I've got to say on that subject. On the subject of Major Ed Dames, if you would like, and I'm already getting a lot of inquiries, if you would like a copy of this program, you can get it by calling 1-800, it's going to be a four-hour program, 1-800-917-4278. That's 1-800-917-4278. And I would imagine now we're going to be needing to schedule something on these Mars artifacts come Monday. This is going to blow everybody away. www.artbell.com. Get up there before the weekend ends.
The Talk Station, AM 1500 KSTP.
To Dreamland, Sunday nights at 9 on AM 1500 KSTP.
With Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. To reach Art from outside the U.S., first dial your access number to the USA, then 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
Let me tell you something. This is going to be the weekend when a lot of people are going to go, oh my God. The photographs on the website are, in my opinion, conclusive. And I've got a layman's opinion. I can only imagine what the experts are going to say about all of this. Before this weekend ends, you've got to get up there. www.artbell.com. Scroll down into the guest area. Click on the name Richard Hoagland. and take a look at the first and the new photographs. I'm getting two reactions from my audience, by fax, by email. The people who are seeing it, who believe it and know Richard would not fake something like this, are going, of course, oh my God. Another reaction, typical, is one I've got here from Dave, who says, hey Art, the artificial stuff that you see on the website came from a Hollywood studio. It can't be real. And that's sort of in the denial category. So, it really is quite startling, even to the average eye. And that's been the problem all along. The average eye is not calibrated to look at old ruins. But beyond question, what you see there was put there long ago. And I think most people, average people now, all of a sudden are going to agree. I guess it is quite a birthday present for Richard Hoagland. Mother's Day is Sunday, May 10th. Now, I don't know about you, but I find it very difficult to shop for my mom. It's hard. Nothing she needs. But everybody would like to get her something nice, something unique, and I found it. It's not very expensive either. It's a perfect rose dipped into 24-karat gold select from the following American Gold Rose Company collection. First, the original rose, simple, no leaves, just $39.95. Next is their classic rose, $49.95, 11 inches long. It comes in a beautiful gift box. And then the big one, $65. An elegant, long-stemmed gold rose, 17 inches long, delivered in a gold presentation box. Buy any of the two I just mentioned, and you receive a free cute little 24-karat gold angel brooch with a crystal. Call, that's a good deal. Call the American Gold Rose Company at 1-800-458-7134. That's 1-800-458-7134. Now, if you're in Alaska, Hawaii, or Canada, call area code 918-687-0404, or on the internet, of course. It is www.americangoldrose.com. All right, my guest Ed Dames, a whole slew of people waiting to ask Ed questions. And so if you're there, Ed, we'll plunge back into it. But before we do, your remote viewing tapes are available. Module 1 and Module 2. Module 2 is the real meat. Module 1 is an introduction. If they would like to acquire these tapes, they can get them, of course, on your website. And we have a link to your website, if anybody can get to it right now. Or there's an 800 number that's good 24 hours a day. And what is that?
That's 1-888-878-0333.
Okay.
Or they can write us, if they'd like, at P.O. Box 3762,
right.
Beverly Hills, California, 90212.
90212. All right, excellent. I heartily recommend them. They are superb productions. They took a long time coming out of the shoot, and a lot of people first worried that Ed Dames was going to sell these tapes, take all the money, run to an undesignated spot in the Pacific and escape forevermore and live with native girls and palm fronds and all the rest of that. But it didn't work out that way, and the tapes indeed did reach the people, and from what I've heard, they really like them.
Well, they have to do more than like them as far as I'm concerned. They need to know how they need to learn it and learn it well, and I ensure that they do that. I teach on the website, I teach on our own website. I teach basic, intermediate, and advanced skills, and that's the technical support that we provide to our product to make sure that these skills get taught effectively and are not watered down, make sure that people can do this right.
Well, it's going to be really interesting to see as more and more people begin to get a look at the same things that you're telling us you have seen, how they handle it. And just very quickly, there is one question. How many remote viewers, everybody's going to ask, is there any, in their behalf I will ask, is there any danger? Because I know in the military program there were some people who became somewhat mentally unstable in trying to do what needed to be done.
As I mentioned before, there isn't any danger in becoming mentally unstable. There is a danger if someone is already mentally unstable and they attempt to learn this. Then this will probably
push them over the edge.
Push them over the edge. Just a little bit too much to handle. The initial response on module one is, oh my God, it works.
Yeah.
And you look up, there's nobody there except me on the screen teaching, and then when you shut the television off, the VCR, and you're doing it yourself, and you realize you've just done this effectively, you know it's real. But on the module two, when someone learns those problem-solving skills, they might be biting off more than they want to know or to handle. And if someone is not intellectually, emotionally, physically, and intuitively ready to do this, they might be in for a rude shock. Because it's going to change for people who have not already started to learn this. It will change the way you look at the world forever, forevermore. There's no way to look back at the world the same way again.
All right, here we go once again. East of the Rockies, you are on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Good evening.
Well, morning, actually.
Oh, okay. I can fully understand Ed Dames when he says he kind of wants to maybe take a break on all of this doom and dreary predictions.
But yes. Where are you, sir?
Upstate New York.
Okay, it is indeed morning. You could have been in Hawaii, and I suppose it could have still been evening there, but upstate New York, it's definitely morning. You say you understand why he wants to take a break?
Right. But at the same time, from the public's point of view, I think it's vital that information like the fungus over Africa and Korea keep getting out, either through the outlets of SciTech or through your show. And with the tapes he's sending out, I think it's also vital that reliable, reputable, as accurate as he is, people be confirmed, perhaps as an alternate source, if he does indeed understandably want to take a break. And is he doing anything in that regard so that this reliable information, this continuous flow, like through your show and his other outlets, can keep going on?
Well, it's a good, fair question. And, of course, I plan to keep in contact with Ed for as long as I'm able.
If you look at SciTech's website, you'll see reports, spot reports and bulletins that we put out that we do not normally discuss on the Art Bell Show. For instance, last month, on March 2nd, you'll see on the website, there's a letter, a spot report from SciTech to the White House and to the Defense Intelligence Agency and to another organization that I helped establish, an intelligence agency. And that is a report on our work that pinpoints the largest currently operating biological warfare production facility in Iraq. It's in a village, Zuma, north of the district, in the Mosul district. Four days after we put that on the street, Saddam Hussein, in a very rare trip outside of the capital, went up to Mosul to check on the family jewels, because this was his largest production facility. So even though I'm out of the military on an active sense, I'm still of targets that we're still national assets, and I know what that responsibility is.
All right, so no matter what, the website's going to continue to carry updated information, right?
Yeah, of a strategic nature.
All right, folks, listen, right now my website is so swamped, we have a link to Ed's website. You scroll down to Ed Dames' name, and you can jump over, but if you can't get in there right now, Ed, what is your direct website address?
www.trv-scitech.com.
That's P-S-I-Tech.
Yes, P-S-I-T-E-C-H .com.
All right, good. Because right now, it would be, you know, the Mars thing is going so nuts that I don't even think they could go on the site.
Yeah, trv-scitech.com.
Gotcha. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Ed Dames. Hi.
Hello.
Hello, where are you?
I'm in Kirkland, Washington.
Okay.
Yes. And to change the subject a little bit from Mars to back on Earth, I've got a question about Korea.
All right.
I have a lot of friends over there, so naturally I'm not too pleased about what I'm hearing tonight about a nuke going off.
You've heard, forget the nuke for a second. if you listen to the real news that's coming from Korea today that I read earlier, you can't be very pleased about that either. I mean, they've got North Korea right now is so starving that they're eating people. North Korea is in such horrendous condition that you can easily imagine, I mean, desperate people do desperate things, and they are absolutely desperate.
Oh, yeah, it scares me to death. But the one thing that's never been covered in any of this discussion about a possible first use of a nuclear weapon since Nagasaki, first use in anger, is where on the peninsula will this be, or has this been remote viewed yet?
Now, that's an interesting question. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, will it be an urban area like Seoul or against a military target like one of our bases over there?
Fair question. Ed, can you be specific?
No, we do not know, and as far as I'm concerned, I mean, just a guesstimate. The kind of a guidance system that they have on their, well, let's use an earlier missile law, for instance, the Longdong 2. It has no guidance system. It's just throw it down range. It's sort of like a V-2 missile.
It's a ballistic missile.
Yeah. V-2 rocket in World War II. The later models, the Chinese versions, do have guidance systems that are halfway decent, but still, I think they're just going to sling this thing down range.
Well, you would think that if the Koreans wanted South Korea for the food, for the material assets that they could seize, the spoils of war, if you will, they wouldn't want to poison that which they wanted.
Mine is not to reason why.
I understand. Indeed. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, Art. Hi, Ed. This is Pete calling from Boise, Idaho.
Yes, sir.
Art, I have several great items for Ed here. Would you like me to do them one at a time or go down the list?
Are they questions?
Questions, yes.
No, let's do them one at a time.
Okay. Ed, a number of months ago on one of Art's shows, you mentioned that you had remote viewed the Tunguska explosion, which occurred in 1908, which there's no explanation for to this day.
Right.
I was curious to find out what, how, and why on that is the first question.
The Tunguska event was one of the most bizarre things that my team has ever remote viewed. In fact, it was done as a contract for the Human Potential Foundation in Washington, D.C., and it was briefed by the head of that foundation to a Rocky Mountain UFO conference.
You're saying that your viewing was done as a contract?
Yes.
Okay.
Done as a conference, a contract, and it was, and the results were briefed at a conference. I think that it's a little bit too technical to go into right now, but suffice it to say that it was not a natural phenomenon per se.
Was it caused by humans?
No.
No. Okay. can you elaborate to some extent?
It's too complex. Again, it is extremely bizarre.
Are you saying you entirely don't understand the...
That's correct. I don't entirely understand. I know that it was, it was as if a vehicle, a robotic vehicle, leaked antimatter fuel. Didn't explode, but leaked antimatter fuel.
Okay.
At that particular point in time space.
Wow.
Was it malevolent in intent?
No, absolutely not. No, it was an accident. It was a miscalculation on the part of its controllers. It was a mathematical miscalculation, but you're
reasonably sure its controllers per se were not of earthly origin.
No, no, they could have been of earthly origin, but if they were in the distant future, and this device was being sent through time. Just happened to scratch the surface of gravity, space-time, at that particular location, and in so doing, rupture a membrane, let's say.
Wow. A time-travel-related incident.
Yep.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. The next item, Art, I'm hoping that you might join me in persuading Ed, as he's done so wonderfully on a number of occasions, to remote view the origin and source of Mel's Hole. That's a pretty dramatic story, and there's a lot of us who would really like to know more on that.
Yes, we have done that as a training example.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's a simple. It's a geological artifact. If you follow, there's at the bottom of Mel's Hold, there is a river, a stream actually, and that flows out to the west towards the sea.
Really?
At the bottom of the hole, there's all kinds of trash. I mean, there's a ledge, and then it goes down below that. There's refrigerators and all kinds of junk and trash. But there's a river. This is a naturally occurring lava tube. It's an ancient lava tube, and flows this river. And there's an aquifer in this lava tube. The aquifer follows the lava tube to the west.
Well, as a matter of fact, if you recall, I don't know whether you do or not, but that was the first thing that Mel said, that for years and years, people had been throwing dead cows, old refrigerators, you name it, they've been throwing it in that hole. That's how it all began.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's neat.
It's very deep and has a stream that flows to the west in it through this ancient lava tube.
Are there a lot of underground bunkers and tunnels? And have you looked at the inner Earth at all, other than Mel's Hole?
Let's see. Have we? Not really. We have looked at seamounts, some particular seamounts where originally we believe these aliens that are termed in the popular literature as the Greys, who own this equipment that I'm talking about, these spheres,
right?
These transcendental technologies that we in SciTech have termed them, they appear to have some logistical centers in seamounts, deep within seamounts. But other than that, we have not looked at anything there.
Well, I'm sure glad he asked about Mel's Hole. That's neat. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Yes, sir. Hi, Art. Hi, Major Ed.
Where are you, sir?
San Clemente, California. This is Stephen calling.
All right, Stephen.
Earlier you wanted me to list my accomplishments.
No, Stephen. One call per show. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yes, Art?
Yes, sir. Where are you?
It's Dave calling from Northeast Kansas again.
Hi, Dave.
Hi. And I'd like to ask my question and then hang up so I can get the answer on tape.
Fire away.
Okay. Now, a while back I called and you had some discussion with Ed about safe places.
That's right.
And I called you up at a later date and said, you know, how about us, you know, average Joes, us blue collars?
Mm-hmm.
And you said, well, we'll probably all just die.
No.
And so I was wondering if the major might have any information on
safe places. Right.
Or a way that those of us... I've got the 386 SX16, so I really can't even get on the web.
All right. Let's ask them.
Okay.
Major, safe places. Everybody wants to know about that, of course.
Yeah. The west side of Glacier National Park, and from that point north.
And from that point north.
Mm-hmm. Glaciers, there's a tremendous amount of, it's the largest source of fresh water in the nation there. And if there is a series of solar hits that desiccate and dry out, that dehydrate the land, those glaciers will melt. And that's more fresh water. I cannot overemphasize the importance of fresh water, a source of fresh water. That's number one.
Water will be at a premium.
Yes. Number two is you need to be in a relatively geographically isolated spot with some like-minded people, because you're not going to want to be in the cities. Look at the cities today and you'll see why. Who's going to want to be, you can understand that.
I can, sure.
And you'll need a place to be underground when the earth heats up. You'll need to escape that heat. But when you come back up, you're still going to be coming back up to parched earth, and your first requirement is going to be water.
All right, good enough. Hold on, Major. We're at the bottom of the hour, and this seems appropriate right now, so why not? We're talking about off the ground, right? I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Big hope for sale or rent, with 80,000 feet of monofilament. Art Bell thinks Mel is bent.
Now here comes the government.
He's got the movie right. Maybe write a book, cause you think he might be the man with the means to make green. He's king of the whole. Well, you know that guy is doing swell. Someone paid a pile of cash to purchase a well. If you haven't seen the mystery hole, it's cause Central tried to plug it with the power pole. Now it is understood Mel sold the hole and he's gone for good. He's lying in the sun, making all that money can sure be fun. So go out to your own backyard, grab a shovel, dig real hard. Now you've got the means to make green. You're the king of the hole.
Did you find the hole? I would have if it wasn't for the meddling kid.
Miss out at the oasis. Send your camel to bed. Shadows painting on faces. Traces of romance in our heads. Heaven holding a hand.
To talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from outside the U.S., first, dial your access number to the USA, then 800-893-0903. If you're a first-time caller, call Art at 702-727-1222. From east of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255. Or call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye.
It is, and I'm telling you, the Martian dust is going to hit the fan this weekend. If you can get to my website, you may not be able to get there now. It's swamped. But mark it down and get there before the weekend is over. Your comments are welcome by email or however you want to get them to me. But the way you reach the new photographs is to go to www.artbell.com. Scroll down to the name Richard Hoagland and simply click and take a look at the new photographs. They're actually marked as new. And send me a message. Let me know what you think, all right? The Bajan, nothing to lose but the pain. All right, home stretch is what we're on right now. Major Ed Dames is my guest, and here he is once again. Ed, is there anything that you personally really, really want to get in before the program ends? I've got a lot of people I want to talk to you, but I just kind of want to ask that question.
Well, I think I'd just like to point out that as I mentioned earlier in the show, that we were going to go after the Amelia Earhart's Lockheed Electra 10E, the wreckage. The reason, and we're going to pinpoint the location. We want to retrieve that wreckage.
Are you going to actually go out there? In other words, once you know where it is, what are you going to do?
Well, that's one of the reasons we're doing it, because my employees have never had the opportunity to actually take their remote viewing data to the field and get the warm fuzzies of the closure. Someone else has always gotten the closure on our work. I want them to have the opportunities that I've had in my career of going out into the field and finding the thing that we worked so hard to remote view. And I've chosen that wreckage to do that with. So, yes, we're going out and retrieve it.
All right. All right. Well, I sure wish you luck. Any idea when that might occur?
It's an ongoing project. We're taking our time and enjoying it. It's a break from other things that we do.
Sure.
We're working a few aircraft accidents now and other things, and this is a more pleasant thing. We know where the, we know down to within 20 mile radius where the aircraft is now. It's just a matter of time, and then we'll get on the plane, go out, tag it, and
that'd rock the world, okay?
Yeah, and it'll do a lot to boost the. It's ground truth. We provide ground truth in this case, and it boosts the credibility of the tool that we use. Those kind of things.
All right. Back to the lines we go. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, this is Lynn, first-time caller from Santa Monica, California.
Santa Monica?
Yes.
That's home turf for Ed.
All right. So what I was wondering is, seeing as Ed is getting a little tired of being known as the prophet of doom and gloom, whether he's considered the possibility of using the collective power of remote viewing to focus on remote healing, particularly the kind of healing that could either help prevent or at least moderate some of the disasters that he sees coming?
That's a very, very good question, actually. And Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet, used his power to diagnose and help the ailing. There is that ability with remote viewing, isn't there, Ed?
Well, as you can see on our website, we have examples of projects. We use this and to not only to help diagnostic in a diagnostic sense, but to identify cures and treatments. Remote healing in that sense is an, what we do is passive. It's a passive psychic phenomenon. Remote healing is tantamount to prayer. And
you don't discount prayer at all.
Not at all. No. It can be used very effectively, as many people in the world know, especially in conjunction with healing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi. I have four questions. My name is Chris. I'm calling from Palo Alto. I'm hoping I can squeeze them in.
Well, four sounds like a lot, but let's hear them.
Okay, first one is safe area for people who live in France. This is where my parents live.
Okay, Switzerland.
Switzerland?
Yep, Switzerland, particularly because of the engineered caves and the deep caves, caverns that have been engineered, and the glaciers and the water and the rest, the community, those kinds of things.
All right.
But France, not too good, huh?
No, no. Liechtenstein and Switzerland.
Okay, what about, personally I have inquired a lot of that, mostly trying to heal myself from a condition called chronic fatigue syndrome. Mm-hmm. Do you have something to say about whether it's good to have debts right now? And also, do you have something to say about chronic fatigue syndrome? Have you ever looked at that as a particular condition?
We have not looked at either the cause or treatments or cures, no.
Okay, not and for someone who is in debt right now, what would you say? Maybe incur even more because you're going to be, you're going to have no goods and no services available to you for a short period of time or maybe a long period of time, or and because debt will be wiped out anyway, or be very careful, which is what I've been doing, and live on a day-to-day basis.
Those are personal decisions. I don't have any recommendations.
Okay, fourth question. Have you ever used remote viewing to see if there were secret sites in the U.S. for biological, chemical, and warfare research?
No, and I don't want to look.
All right. Straight answer.
Yeah.
East of the Rockies?
I've considered it, but I don't want to look.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, Ed and Art.
Where are you, sir?
Houston.
Houston, all right.
Yes. I have a couple quick techie questions about what you're doing. How accurate percent-wise have you determined that your new method of remote viewing is?
Technical remote viewing used by a trained remote viewer is 80% per session. So using Bayesian posterior probabilities, if one remote viewer works the same target again and again and again, they can raise the likelihood that the data is accurate up to around 90 to 95%. When used as a team, it's always 95% or higher.
Wow. Do you hear things? Or is it just visual?
No, all of our senses come into play, but in a different way. We pick up the idea of the sound. The idea as a pattern of information finds resonance in a memory. It finds a label. and it triggers that memory, and then we perceive the sound. So it's not a direct perception; it's an indirect perception, sort of a virtual reality.
Right.
So the idea first, as a pattern, then into mind, into the brain, finds the label, and then the perception.
So how does this compare to lucid dreaming?
I don't know.
As a
I've never engaged in lucid dreaming. You'd have to talk to either one of my employees or one of or someone who has taken the tape course, who is familiar with lucid dreaming. I can't help you there.
Hmm.
All right.
My only other question would be, how do you get a job?
With my company?
Yeah.
Well, they're at a premium. They're at a premium.
They're at a premium. I take it you take the cream or the crop.
I do.
Huh? All right, good answer. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Oh, I'm in Charleston, Kauai. I'm wondering if my energy chip...
You're in Kauai, Hawaii?
Yes.
All right.
If you see that my energy chip, which I think is revolutionary enough, will appear in the future, Major Danes...
In order to do that, you'd have to target that specific device and then perform what we call a trajectory on it in time. Track it through time and see what happens. We do this with corporations. We look at an engineering development and we'll target that, lock onto it, and track it through time to see what kind of exigencies of time and space it goes through, whether or not it dead ends, splits off into other technologies, or the CEO takes it and runs away to Japan with it, something like that.
More times than not, what occurs?
No comment.
First caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, this is Ron from Athens, Georgia.
Yes, sir.
I would like to ask Ed. He mentioned earlier about the Mexican UFO video.
Yes.
And he hadn't covered that yet. I was wondering what he found out.
Well, we did cover that. Were you not listening?
Yeah, off and on. I guess I was on the internet for a minute, but...
Okay, do you want to give them the capsulized version?
A down and dirty would be to compare an electron and how it forms the illusion of an electron cloud under an electron microscope. That particular dish saucer-shaped object, I don't want to call it a vehicle, was produced in a similar fashion by a small sphere about a foot in diameter, a single one,
right,
moving very rapidly and in an etch-a-sketch, a three-dimensional etch-a-sketch type of a fashion, creating the illusion of that particular symmetry, that particular geometry. That same sphere is used by another agency, an alien agency, to create crop circles. It's sort of a general use tool.
All right. Here we go. West of the Rockies, you are on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, how are you tonight, Art?
Quite well, thank you. Very excited in a lot of ways. Where are you?
I'm in Littleton, Colorado.
All right.
This is the second time I've got through. I'm thinking of playing the lottery tomorrow.
All right.
I just wanted to ask him, I seem to recall the last time he said during his mission in Stargate that he was going to use lasers to contact the race in the Pleiades.
No, not the Pleiades. I never mentioned which race nor where.
Oh, okay. You just said it was a race, and I wasn't sure.
In fact, tonight I did state what I would be communicating with. I would be attracting attention of sentient machines, and for all intents and purposes, robots in and around Mars.
Oh, okay. Well, I must have misunderstood last time.
All right, sir. Appreciate the call. Glad you got it now. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, this is Nancy from Pennsylvania.
Hi, Nancy.
I have a question that's very similar to one someone else had, but the wording's a little different, and maybe that'll help.
All right.
The question is, they read patterns of the future.
Right.
And instead of reading patterns, why don't they project patterns in
that
the
would
future?
That would be active. What we do is passive.
You can't. It just doesn't.
No.
Okay. All right. Well, it was worth a try for all our lives. Okay.
All right. Thank you. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, Art. Hi, Mr. Dames.
Hi.
This is Larry in Spokane.
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to know, as a Christian, Mr. Dames, How do you know whose universe you're looking into?
I really don't care.
You don't care?
No.
It's,
how would I know? I have a very puny mind, and I don't really think I could know something like that. It would be like a corpuscle in the human body trying to discern what universe it's in.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned one time you could not read in remote viewing or understand spoken speech.
That's correct. We can't, alphanumeric words and letters are being, we don't have the capability to do that, but we can extract all the ideas behind them.
Oh, it interested me as a Christian because I read that my God is the author of creation, and he is also called the Word.
He's not just your God, is he?
Well, we're getting into epistemology and eschatology here. And,
and I heard you mention one time you didn't know God, you only knew information. And, you know,
then you haven't listened very carefully, because we have covered the subject of God and Jesus, and these have been targets, and we've talked rather extensively about that. Is that correct, Ed?
That's correct. And that was a misquote, by the way, Larry.
Yeah. So there you are. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Yeah, this is Dave in Ohio.
Hello, Dave.
Yes. I was wondering if he might have any idea of what this big secret is that that Kent was talking about that we wouldn't be intelligent enough to take.
All right. Well, I'll translate that a little. Kent was a guest who turned out to be a fraud who got exposed on the program. That's a whole story that I don't want to go into right now. But there are many, many people who believe, Ed, that there are revelations we're on the edge of today. I believe that more than ever. In fact, that we may be on the dawn of them right now with what's up on the website. That we're not ready to embrace and accept. Is there information of that magnitude that's about to break over the heads of all of us?
There's something big out there, Art, and I can't put my finger on it. It's too fuzzy for me. Again, I'm a simple man, and even though this tool is powerful, it's still going into a simple wooden head, a simple man, and I can't get a handle on what this is. So, just don't know.
Kind of like
I'm topping out, of course, but I don't know. I don't know what we're facing here. It's exciting. I like excitement as much as the next guy, but I don't enjoy knowing that many people are going to die. So that's tempered. The excitement's tempered with that knowledge.
Sure. All right. We're way out at the end of the program here, Ed, and every line, of course, is jammed, but the time is limited. So I want to one more time give you an opportunity to give out the phone number and the address to be sure we've got the address right.
Okay. If you'd like to order the tapes and know how to do what we do, the number is 1-888-878-0333.
All right.
And SciTech's address is P.O. Box 3762, Beverly Hills, California, 90212.
90212.
I'd like to wish Richard Hoagland a happy birthday.
Well, I think he's going to have a real good birthday, actually.
Yeah, he is.
Ed, it has been a pleasure, as always. And we will stay in touch, and when the time is appropriate, I hope we'll do another program.
Okay.
Take care, my friend.
Yeah.
Take care.
Okay, you too.
That's Ed Dames, folks, and it's never, 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 never a boring program when Ed is around. If you would like a copy of this program, it is obviously a four-hour program, and you can get a copy of it, or any program we do with a guest, generally, by calling 1-800-917-4278. That's 1-800-917-4278. And you can mark this day as the day that the debate about Mars began to turn the corner big time. Because, again, I'll say this, no matter what you do this weekend, whatever else you do, you make it up to my website. Get to a library, get to a friend's computer, do whatever you've got to do to get to my website scroll down to the guest area, you will see a list of guest names. Ed Dames will be one of them, Major Dames, and another will be Richard Hoagland. When you get to the Richard Hoagland name, click on it. Go over there and look at the photographs that are marked as new. Those new photographs are ones that were taken earlier yesterday by the spacecraft we now have circling Mars. They are the most remarkable, unambiguous, shocking, paradigm-turning photographs that I have ever seen in my whole life. And I would think even the skeptics are going to have to imagine one of two things. Either they're going to have to imagine they were wrong and admit it, because they're obviously artificial objects, or they're going to have to level the charge that somebody cooked them up with Photoshop, which, of course, is not going to stand, because I'm already getting messages from people who say they're able to duplicate what Richard Hoagland has done. So if you think you're able to take the shock before the weekend ends, get to my website and take a look-see. It's www.artbell, that's A-R-T-B-E-L-L, lowercase, .com. My, what a night. See you with Whitley Strieber on Dreamland Sunday, or back here Monday night, Tuesday morning. Good night, all.
The Talk Station, AM 1500 KSTP.
The home can be hazardous.
Now, Sam, be...